did not.
Wait, I'm gonna move my book
a bit forward.
Yeah, that's perfect. Just like
perfect,
that.
Dude. Yeah, it's yeah, doing just fine.
Great.
All right, how about now?
You take two.
Wait, talk again, noob.
Does it sound better?
No.
Welcome to the Scotchcast. This is the Giant Bomb Guild Wars 2 community's off-topic podcast, or are we the Guild Wars 2 community? Also joining me today is Thurbleton.
Hi, everybody.
Do you want to like put out a PSA out there for why we haven't done a Linking Cast for quite a while? Just so the audience knows, because this is the Linking Cast, like RSS.
It's again the same reason as last week. This
okay?
Yeah, everyone just wants to keep playing Pokemons.
Pokemon? Oh man, that's kind of sad.
Hopefully, after the Halloween has subsided, because really it's more or less the same as last year. Maybe the next update will revitalize the other hosts into talking about stuff.
Is it possible to get some Halloween impressions from you today, sir? Just for anyone who wanted any of that information?
Yeah, sure. For the Scotchcast Leaking Cast minute.
We'll wait for what we're playing, but
yeah,
keep that in mind. We'll add that to your list. Also joining me today is Durin. What's up, Durin?
Dude, Pyroar is the shit.
Pyroar?
Pyroar.
Pyroar? Who the fuck's Pyroar?
He is the evolution of Litleo.
Oh Pokemon!
He's okay. He's
oh, he is
okay.
The shit.
I have a Mega Charizard X, so suck it. Also joining today is Noobarama.
Okay, why the fuck does everyone play Air in this game? I'm the only person playing Armor in World in Conflict right now. And you guys haven't made this to join my game.
As a surprise guest, who's like second time on the show, if not third, I think second ever, Mage Knight is joining us today. How's Mage Knight?
Hi, good to be here.
What's up?
Well, at least someone appreciates
doing
being here.
Pretty good. I've been pretty busy lately, but taking today off.
Cool. Yes. Yeah. That's really why you could be here, because usually you're pretty busy.
Precisely.
Exactly. Either way, we're going to jump straight to what we've been playing. In today's show, we have a shitload of games to talk about because we have five hosts for the first time in forever. We'll probably start with Durin, but before we get there, after that, we'll be talking about the Watch Dogs delay, Steam controller demo, and some other stuff here and there. Not much news this week, so mostly if you're coming to this episode, just expect a whole lot of what we've been playing. So first up in that segment is Durin. What's up, Durin?
I'm going to stop playing Pokemon because I have no idea what you just said. So, this is why we don't play games on this podcast.
Who are you rolling with?
I'm going to open it so I can answer that.
I'm
currently rolling with... this is why I didn't get a Mega Charizard X, because I'm currently rolling with a Talonflame, a Pyroar, a Delphox, a Blastoise, Diggersby,
and
a Jolteon.
Back up a sec. Isn't Adele Fox a fox that likes listening to Adele?
No, Del Fox.
Oh.
It is a psychic fire fox.
Oh. Fire fox?
Oh, that's a starter. The starter.
Yeah, it becomes fucking psychic. That's so weird. Okay. Yeah, a lot of fire on my team, so I didn't go with Charizard.
I've actually pretty much got my final team together. I've also got a Jolteon. Because Jolteon is still probably the best electric type to use in Zapdos. Like, it's sad, because I looked through all the new Pokemon.
Or he's just the best Pokemon.
What, no Magnetite? Is that the
Back
Pokemon?
In the day, I used to own...
What you used to own?
I used to own Jolteon.angelfire.com.
And you let that slip
is
away from
you? Your favorite Pokemon?
I did, unfortunately. And literally all the website was I had hand-coded 150 pages of basically a Pokedex, except it wasn't actual information. It was just pictures of every Pokemon.
You piece of shit.
I was in like eighth grade.
No, that's actually, okay. In that perspective, it's pretty good. Well done. But no, what I was saying. Yeah, so Jolteon is still pretty good. There's an evolution of Magneton. Thank you for asking, Mage Knight. He's actually pretty good, but I don't know if you can get him in this game. He's in Black and White, too.
Oh, wait, an evolution of Magneton?
Yeah.
What? He evolves again?
Really?
Yeah, he's a third form. It looks like a weird spaceship.
I haven't like a weird spaceship. I haven't played since Ruby and Sapphire. So,
man.
Yeah.
Have you got a 3DS?
I don't have a 3DS now.
Okay. If you did, I would. This one is worth jumping back into.
Yeah. See, I'm
super jealous. I want the 3DS for like Fire Emblem and stuff. But I can't justify shelling out that kind of money right now.
Yeah. Or ever. I came off like pretty negative on Fire Emblem last week. It's pretty good. Like I gave it like an 8 out of 10, and I think it's kind of where I'd put that still. Like even though I've had more time to think about it. But yeah, 3DS is a freaking awesome. But my team, because I want to keep this firmly on the Pokemon topic. Because this is the only chance we get to him. What are you fucking doing? let's see, Gabite, who's going to turn into Garchomp, and he's rigged. Shelgon, who's going to turn into Salamence, and he's rigged. Charizard, who's always been rigged. Jolteon is still probably the best electric type. And I picked Greninja as my starter. Greninja's the final form. He's a water slash dark, which is kind of crazy. So he would utterly destroy your starter, but... Whatever. That's like kind of the intention. And Gravedivore. Yeah. Gardevoir, who's like a psychic fairy.
Yeah, psychic fairy. I had that one for a little while. That one, I might pick her back up again only because she's fairy type, and that's fucking...
Yeah.
Wait, fairy type? Wait, so I'm gonna wait for too long.
Yeah, they added fairy type. It's basically like a direct counter to dragon type.
Oh, weird.
It has like almost no fucking weaknesses.
That's weird.
Like steel and like poison or something.
What is it with them adding types that have like zero weaknesses, like fucking steel and?
Well, the reason they added fairy was because dragon was
specifically to counter dragon. That seems like a weird balancing choice.
Yeah.
Well, no, they've all got like it's got three things it's strong against and three things it's weak against. Of those numbers, the only one that's like pervasive in the PvP community is dragon. So we say it's a counter to dragon, but it's actually like a counter to multiple.
Oh, like that was directly from one of the directors of the game, like said that they make for a counter to dragon. But Gardevoir in particular, though, is incredibly powerful because
she's
psychic. Grass psychic. Mm-hmm. Sorry, not grass psychic fairy. And so like
it covers her weakness.
Not only is she super effective against like dragon, but she's also like immune to it, and she's like four times resistant to something else. Like she has very, very little in terms of actual weaknesses.
Yeah, she is strong, and she also has strong,
like made of paper though too. So there's
everyone has like one psychic attack in their party, right? Like I always find that happens where I just have like this one like powerhouse psychic I keep in my back.
I think you kind of have to nowadays. Since they're dark. Yeah. Like dark is so powerful, you have to have a psychic on your team.
Well, dark is immune to psychic.
The other way around. Yeah, never mind.
Yeah. Psychic is so powerful you need a dark on your team. But that's why I love this starter because it comes as a dark card. Yeah.
Well, the great thing about psychic is like, okay, fine, we're done.
No, you know what? If you want to talk about Pokemon.
No, I don't. I really don't. I know nothing about Pokemon.
Do you want to be the very best, though?
I do want to be the very best, like no one ever was.
And thus completed this picture.
So moving on.
Anything else? Because my impressions for it, which I talked about last week, and I do want to move on from Pokemon because I've talked about it before, was that it's kind of the Pokemon I've been wanting for 7 years, like since the previous next gen of consoles came out. In that it's kind of this feels like a console Pokemon game put
or
on the 3DS.
We're probably ever going to get to one.
Yeah, and that was really impressive to me. Like, is that kind of where you stand as well?
Well, like, here's the thing is, like, Mage Knight said he hasn't played since, like, Ruby and Sapphire. I have bought every single generation. I haven't actually finished one since...
Nice.
You can count Gold and Silver as long as you don't count the fight against Red at the end, because I never actually beat him.
Right?
If you count that, then that was the last one I finished. Past that, I generally get like maybe 10, 15 hours in and then just stop. But I've bought every single one of them. But yeah, this one is definitely it. I think honestly, like, it's weird because the jump to 3D is really all I wanted. And they did a really good job of that.
And they use it really well in like a lot of like the central city.
As long as you're not talking about Lumio City, that city is a piece of shit.
I think the city is beautiful, but moving in it is the most atrocious. Oh my god!
It reminds you that the 3DS doesn't have a second circle pad.
Analog stick, yeah. Oh my, like, why did they fill that city with like small, narrow, twisting side streets when you can't even change the camera?
Yeah, that city's terrible. But other than that, and I think it's really smart too that like they knew that they were kind of pushing the system pretty far anyway to go 3D or sorry, not 3D, polygonal. And so like they were smart enough to disable 3D pretty much everywhere.
Well, yeah, because as soon as it gets to battle, the frame rate fucking... I'm not a frame rate whore, but it gets easily down to like 15 frames a second in
battle. 3D off.
Even with 3D off. Like, especially if you have... I got a Charizard, and so he's really animated. He flaps his wings and shit while he's in the air. And anytime it's like any like remotely off-center camera position, the whole thing just starts chugging, and it really kind of ruins... like. At some point, I just put the game down and didn't go back to it.
Really noticed it, where it's probably the worst, oddly enough, is not actually when there's combat happening. It's actually when it's kind of sitting idle while it's waiting for you to pick your moves. Especially when it's like both Pokemon on screen, that part really, really, really chugs.
Oh, dude, yeah. Well, like when it does like the diagonal slash to the screen with both Pokemon, fucking kills it.
But like during the fights, like it's not really that big of a deal, and it generally looks really good, and the animations are real smooth, so... Yeah. Overall, I'm really happy that they finally went this direction, and I hope that I'm already looking forward to what the next one is, and I'm hoping that with this one doing as well as it seems to have done, this might give them the push to maybe finally try a console version.
Oh, man, but they've been so staunchly.
Did you not play Pokemon Colosseum?
A real Pokemon.
A real Pokemon.
That was not a real Pokemon game.
I remember liking Pokemon Colosseum, actually.
Yeah. Well, no, Colosseum wasn't terrible, but like there wasn't a good like it. There was no. I want a Pokemon single player game in there.
Yeah,
like, that was like a spin-off game.
It was a spin-off game. That's literally what it was.
What level were you about, Durin?
Right now,
you guys. Yeah, your average level.
About 40.
Yeah, I'm about where I am.
I've only got
Because XP share just broke the game. I'm about like
you know what though like it broke the game the best way possible for me because I'm the person that I level an entire team of six and try to keep them all around the same level, which is part of why I've given up on every Pokemon game since Gold and Silver. Because there's just so much grinding required for that. Whereas now, like, not only is there not any grinding required for that, but if you decide you want to swap somebody in, like, you know, somebody isn't working out for your team, you want to swap in a new one. You can just leave them on your bench until they get up to the level of your team and then start using them. Like,
it's so good.
Yeah.
So good. I'm so happy they put it in. Like, it changed the game for me because no longer a grind. Like, you barely have to grind in Pokemon.
Now what they need to do is they need to release a Wii U Pokemon Coliseum Stadium kind of game and bring back Dodrio Speed. I love that at least Mage Knight got that one.
Oh man, I remember playing so much Pokemon Stadium when I was a kid.
Just like, I had a 64, so
it was the only way I could get a max level team.
Yeah,
just Cynic, what Dodrio Speed was you could basically use the pack on the back of the controller to put your Game Boy game into, and it would load your team in, and you could fight against each other. But you could also use the Nintendo 64 to play your game on your big screen. And what you could do is you could unlock Doduo and Dodrio Speed. Dodrio Speed was ridiculous. Like, it was just super fucking fast. So you could basically just grind out the score over and over and over and over again and gain levels like crazy.
In a couple minutes. That's my end game. Like, I always end up just putting one Pokemon all the way through the Elite Four, then the next Pokemon, then the next Pokemon, then the next Pokemon, until I get everyone to about 70.
Like a ROM where you're running it at like max speed.
Yeah. But have you lit up Lumino City yet? Have you done the Pokemon challenge?
I'm right before the power plant.
Okay, yeah. So you have to do the power plant. Once you get back into Lumino City, you can there's these cafes you can go into that is there's like a 1-star and a 2-star and a 3-star restaurant. And they are essentially just 3 or 4 battles in a row, which are 2-on-2, 3-on-3. And that's like the quickest way to level. You get like 1,000 XP per fight.
Yeah,
like per Pokemon you defeat. And yeah, just...
Yeah, no, fuck that.
Cool.
Just double and triple battles are the worst thing ever added to Pokemon.
You level so fast. You level so fast. Anyway.
We talked a lot.
Does it say overall impressions? Do you like it?
I'm having a fucking blast with Pokemon.
Yeah, I me too.
I have in a long time.
I had that problem for a while with the frame rate just got to me and I just put it down for a couple of days, but now I picked it back up. I'm pretty back into it. So what else have you been playing, Duren? Let's just move on from that topic before it infects the rest of the show.
right before I got Pokemon, probably not the best planning, but like the day before I got Pokemon, I got Grand Theft Auto 5.
Oh, yeah.
So I played exactly one day of that.
Okay, so how far is one day? I mean, like...
Actually, I played a little bit a few days back. I just got Trevor.
Okay.
Just unlocked Trevor.
You guys need to talk about GTA 5 amongst yourselves, because I have no...
I have not played GTA 5 either.
Yeah, me either.
They fixed everything I hated about 4.
Okay, explain that.
Well, the driving, you don't feel like you're driving a fucking boat on water. Like, the cars feel good, but they also, like, different cars definitely still feel different. They did a lot better job of the handling on cars.
Right.
One of the best additions they did to that game was adding ridiculously precise snap targeting, because the shooting in Grand Theft Auto sucks.
So is it like Red Dead, where you just do left trigger, right trigger, and can murder everyone at every range? Because that's what really frustrated me about that game, was just how easy it was just to headshot everything in front of you.
Yeah. I mean, you're not headshotting. It's basically it auto-aims to center mass.
Sure.
And so if you want a headshot, you do have to kind of adjust a little bit.
You flick your thumb up slightly and you get a headshot.
Yeah, yeah.
Come on.
And it does have, like, you flick your right analog stick left or right, and it'll change targets and stuff. But, like, that's the thing, though, is that, like, unfortunately, that's what they have to do, because in the ridiculous amount of people they have working on those games at Rockstar, they don't have a single person who knows how to actually make a shooter, which is really unfortunate for their games of shooters.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of – it's an unfortunate thing you have to just kind of be okay with Rockstar games. But at least they've done that, as opposed to like what Grand Theft Auto 4 was, where there wasn't any kind of snap target, so you actually had to deal with the shitty shooting mechanics. And honestly, like, I don't come to GTA for precision shooting anyway. Like,
sure, yeah.
That's like going to Uncharted for exploration.
Like, yeah.
It's not the game for it.
I suppose you're right, but...
Or even going to Uncharted for precision shooting, because Uncharted shooting is arguably worse. Yeah. But yeah, no, like, they fixed those things. The character control is pretty good. So I was never a fan of San Andreas. I guess part of it is, like, I don't care about that lifestyle.
Right.
Not to sound racist.
No, yeah, I guess, yeah.
You're not a straight-up thug from the street, yo.
Yeah, I get why Jeff loved San Andreas and why he enjoys that this game, because Jeff is a thug from the streets.
Yeah. you're correct, yeah.
But I've never, like, associated with that at all, and I hated San Andreas for that. Like, it was just not a game that I had any interest in playing. And I feel like, to some extent, Franklin's stuff started off kind of feeling like that. Like, I was really not feeling it. But once he met Michael, like, I'm totally cool. And oddly enough, they make enough of a mockery of, like, that kind of, like, gangbanger lifestyle that I'm more okay with it than I expected to be.
Yeah, Franklin seems to be like the guy who is, he knows enough of that life to be dangerous.
But he also knows that it's like, it's a stupid fucking lifestyle.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of high end with that.
Yeah. Like, he's always like talking down on the other people that are with him about how, like, he needs to get out of this. This is dumb. This is not what he wants to do. So I got that's pretty great. But I will say that I so many times I've wanted to kill Tanya.
See, I haven't like interacted with Tanya that much.
I can't decide if her voice actress is bad or if she's really good at being that annoying person. like just the way that she delivers her lines, like she's yelling into the mic.
But now, I'm curious how much of this you've done, but I've noticed that whenever I play, there's actually a lot of stuff happening, I guess, under the hood or behind the scenes, I guess, better way to put it, when it comes to the secondary characters and the interaction between the primary characters of like Franklin and all that, when it like with the emails and all that. And I'm a little surprised, like I can get into the character until it comes to like reading the text that it comes from, like your aunt that Franklin is living with. And then you can choose to respond, and it's an automated response. You don't actually type what you want to say. Franklin types what he wants to say. And I'm usually taken aback by like, oh, that's the character I thought I was portraying with.
I haven't actually gotten far enough to actually start getting those yet. Like getting the response, like the only like text email things I've gotten is from like his ex-girlfriend, I guess, or whatever.
Okay.
But nothing I can actually respond to. But yeah, I don't know. That does seem really weird. Cause like in some way, it kind of feels like, and this is, I guess, not really answering your question with this, but to answer your question, like I do feel like that is a weird thing for them to include, because it seems in some ways like they're trying to have you connect with the character, or at least with one of the three characters. But then, like they're, like you said, like they're kind of automating the responses, and so you're like, well, I guess which one do I hate least? Like which one seems at least more like what I might say? But actually, I was talking with somebody about this game not too long ago, and one thing that is kind of interesting is they basically kind of, with this game in general, they kind of pulled a Capcom, like pulled a Resident Evil 6, and they tried to make a GTA for everybody, with the exception of they actually figured out how to do it, and Capcom fell flat on their face. Because like you have, when you're playing as each of those different characters, like it, the game has kind of a different feel to it. Like with the missions you're doing, the people you're interacting with, and in some cases, you know, the decisions you're making. But like, it seems like each character kind of caters to a different type, a different style of player. And that was the same thing that the Capcom did with Resident Evil 6 with their three different campaigns. But the smart thing that they did here, and maybe it was something they were just able to do because of the type of world that they build, was it's all kind of happening all at once, and you can switch kind of almost on the fly, assuming you're not in missions. And so you're never playing through the same content again. And that was kind of
a big problem with, yeah,
that was the big problem with Resident Evil 6 is by the time you finish the second campaign, you have played through the same events so many times. And exactly, and then like you're loading up the third one knowing like, okay, I'm going to see this, I'm going to see that, and I'm going to see that. Like you kind of already know all the story beats as you're going. And it's just, it's just recycled content. Whereas this way is a lot smarter way to handle it.
There's still a lot of things that I'm waiting to see how they play out. Like I'm very curious. There's tension building up, or at least it seems like that from an outside perspective. I'm like, there's parts of the story that are still like, okay, is Trevor just going to go along with this? Is Trevor not going to go crazy because he's a crazy person and he should be going crazy?
Trevor seems like, he's a crazy person, but like
everything he has some weird convoluted reason for doing.
Yeah, but like it's weird because like he reminds me in some ways of you when you were a boy? Of the Joker from the most recent Batman movies.
Okay, so like Heath Ledger's Joker.
Like there are times where he is where he's just batshit crazy, but then there's other times where he is like almost uncharacteristically level-headed.
Yeah.
And he just makes those turns on. Like I can see why Jeff has said that like there are two people that are writing for him, or it seems like there is, because you can almost see when those changes are happening. And I definitely think it was intentional.
Yeah, I can actually agree with that, because like the, I'm not really spoiling too much because in a lot of reviews, I guess, mute it for the next 2 minutes or something. But there was a part with the torture scene.
Be careful here, because a lot of people will not pay attention and still get mad. So,
there was a torture scene. A lot of people have talked about it. I won't say what happens in it, but what happens?
Someone gets tortured.
Yeah. Okay. Spoiler: someone gets tortured in the torture scene. But what's happening with the character in that moment is very, very opposite of what happens just after that moment. And I was just like, okay, there's like two different people writing for this outcome or something, or they wanted to make two sides of a story. Like Franklin is like, has some of the best traits while also like dynamically is one of the worst characters in Psychopaths.
Or wait, you mean Trevor?
Trevor. Sorry. Who did I say?
Franklin.
Franklin. You said Franklin.
I'm sorry. Nice. Trevor.
Yeah. Like I think Trevor's actually one of the more interesting characters in this game. Like having even just like, I literally just met him. I did like, I've done a couple missions with him basically. And yeah, he's definitely probably the most interesting character in this game thus far, just
he's
because
crack or meth tweaker, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the unstable, violent kind.
Again, I think it goes back to like Thurb was saying, like his like just ridiculous justifications for the things that he's doing. Anyway, moving on from that game, I will say I haven't touched GTA Online.
I want to quickly say though, just give us your impressions of GTA Online. But
I haven't touched GTA Online. I'm not going to until I know it's actually solid. But I also don't really have high expectations for it, so whatever.
Now, I'm actually really have super high expectations for GTA on PC, which I'm happy they finally announced.
Oh, did they actually announce
it? Oh, did they
officially?
Yeah, that happened.
I'm pretty sure it's been announced. It's a ways off, like, but yeah.
Wait, when? When is this? I did not see this on.
There were a lot of reports that were basically saying, like, yes, it will happen.
Yeah, but that's, like, everywhere.
I mean, yeah, everyone's guessing, but Red Dead never came to PC, so I'm not holding out hope for it.
I will look on this look up for the announcement, but...
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me at all. It absolutely would not surprise me. Yeah, I think, Liz said, like, the reason why they probably haven't acknowledged it maybe up until now is they didn't want to cannibalize sales on the console version. They wanted to have a really strong push at the beginning from people like me who they knew were going to buy the game on console anyway, and then when they announced the PC version, we'll inevitably buy the PC version.
Yep. Double dippers are... Oh, God. Either way.
Okay, I think NVIDIA confirmed it and then denied it.
Okay.
Oh, sorry. No, the NVIDIA thing, yeah, that's Intel said the same thing. Intel basically said they would be dumb not to bring it to PC. I mean, it's just...
Okay. But either way, I think my greatest takeaway from GTA 5 as a person who hadn't played it is the fact that people have had really positive reactions to the multiple protagonist thing hopes for me to get more depth in other games. Like, for example... If you look at a Mass Effect or a Witcher 2, there are frequently multiple parties interacting to form the central plot. So essentially there's the main faction, there's the opposing faction, maybe some third factions in general and so on and so forth. Now in novels, how it would work is, and why I love novels so much, is that good authors try to A, humanize, and B, give the perspective of, just in general, the all of the factions which are warring in a specific piece of work. So essentially, you'd have characters from each side, and Game of Thrones is a fantastic example of this with the Lannisters, etc., where you empathize with both sides of a conflict, and you're seeing the perspectives of both sides of the conflict. And that's something that's been done in novels for many, many years, and has been left out of gaming. And I can't wait to see if people take the lessons of GTA 5 and say put an RPG. Because imagine a Witcher game where there's like two opposing factions and you're freely switching between both and they're actively working against each other to achieve the same goal. Like, that could be something incredibly...
I feel
incredibly...
like there's a game that did do this well, but I can't bring one to mind off the top of my head.
Yeah, I can't either. Like, I was thinking while you guys were talking about GTA 5 and I was barely listening to them, to be honest.
Pokemon? What?
I know there's a lot of open world games where you have like factions that are fighting with each other, but usually you kind of go down one of their paths and you can't really flip between them.
Yeah.
There are a few games that have that you like betray them at certain points and be like, okay, you want to switch that, like, especially just now.
But
you
imagine
can't.
You're playing both the protagonist and the antagonist in the game, and you're actually working against each other and you're seeing both perspectives and they're both people you connect
Cynic,
with.
I told you not to tell anybody about that game I was making. God damn it.
That could be, like, so interesting, and this game proves that it works. Like in the middle of a mission in an RPG, imagine switching to the other side, and either, like, it'd be sad if people just start, if they give you the option to just like fumble on one side and make it easier for the other one or stuff like that. But if you actually have the objectives to make you want to fuck each other over, but be playing both sides of the conflict, that could be so interesting to play. And I hope they,
people. Well, I think the hard part of that is it really does come down to that balance. I mean, think about,
yeah,
break it down to its most basic concept. Like that would be like playing checkers against yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very, very much the case. Or, but
it's quite lonely.
That's
and
one.
Sad.
That's one app.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that is correct.
Essentially, what it comes down to is you would be playing that game, just kind of wishing that other side was controlled by other people instead.
Yeah, or but that's perhaps one way that would not work. But imagine, for example, you have two factions which are going towards the same goal that aren't necessarily competing with each other, but are both doing different sides of the story. And other games have done that.
Right.
For example, I think like the one where you're playing two orcs or whatever.
Thinking of Golden Sun? Golden Sun that did that, where like you started off as like basically some guys, and then you actually at some point swap over to another party, and they're actually like actively against the other ones.
Oh, like that? No, yeah.
No. What I'm thinking of at the end of Golden Sun.
What the Final Fantasies did?
No, what I was thinking of is at the end of Golden Sun 1, you like something happens or whatever. You start Golden Sun 2, and you're actually playing as the opposing, the enemy essentially of the.
I was thinking more to mean that you sort of like freely chose between the two sides and sort of like dynamically. That's what I got out of that, but
yeah. But yeah, that's kind of what I meant. Like just being able to hot swap between them and achieve sub objectives with two different groups of people and that kind of stuff, but they actually work against each other. I don't know. I just want to see more people play around with multiple daggers now that it's proved to be working. It's kind of all I really need to say. Duren, any thoughts on Ruminations about GTA 5 before we want to move on?
I'm hoping that at some point my Pokemon play slows down so I can get back to it.
Nice.
Well, I don't understand how someone could choose Pokemon over Grand Theft Auto. I've never played Pokemon in my life.
That is why.
Huh. Here it is. What you're saying is you don't understand how someone could choose crack over beer.
Exactly. I don't understand it.
Okay.
Like, why are crack addicts addicts? Why don't they just stop? It's so dumb.
I'll go through this one because nobody even knows what the fuck I'm talking about with it. But I played a little bit of a game called Dragon's Prophet. I believe that was
right. Yeah, what the fuck is this?
That sounds familiar.
It probably would sound familiar, Noob.
I guess, okay, while Duren's looking that up, there is one moment in GTA that I want to talk about that I thought was just kind of funny. And I basically took something that was scripted out of context. So there's a part where after you've linked up with Trevor, Michael, and Franklin, where you're going to a mission and they're having a conversation. I guess the objective is just like get in a car that seats three people. So I chose a city bus that had like half a dozen people already in it. And so I got sort of this like MMO feel or something like Payday the Heist thing of these guys are having this conversation about doing something clearly illegal. Well, there's all these people like all these standard by like just it was magical. I was cracking up and yeah.
Dragon's Prophet. I was correct. It's a free to play MMO that recently released on Steam. And because we all know I am a sucker for seeing what the hell those things are when they come out, I decided to download that and launch it. And within like seven levels, I had a flying mount. I already had a dragon I was flying around on.
You got a dragon.
I got a dragon.
I hope a Dragon's Prophet game would have its dragon pretty early.
The funny part is like the way they balance like flying mounts in that game is like you can only fly about 40 feet up in the air and then they just kind of soar back down to the ground. But like, yeah, the combat was all right at best. It looked okay, but I just wanted to mention it because I thought it was just insane when they gave me a flying mount within seven levels of the game. It has like dynamic event kind of stuff that you see in a lot of modern MMOs.
Gave you a flying mount that early, what's the progression? Or do you have any idea what the fucking progression is in that game at all?
What do you mean?
Like, what are you aiming towards if there's no like large rewards left for you? Because that's one of the big rewards if you paid gear, just gear.
Yeah. Well, because no, that's the thing. Is like that's where I think a lot of newer MMOs are starting to understand is that faster traversal should not be a reward. It should just be something you have. Like, that's one thing that Guild Wars understood from the beginning. That's why they gave you waypoints.
Well, I also think...
You know what? It's something Pokemon understood.
Oh, God. Yeah. Not the...
Roller skates.
You get the fly up to, like, the fourth gym. You start with freaking running shoes. You get, like, roller skates at the start as well. You get a bike just, like, in the second town. It's fucking amazing.
Yeah, it's great. So, yeah, Dragon's Prophet, it's a free-to-play MMO. It's not terrible. It's not great. Moving on.
What was Therb going to say before I overrode him with Pokemon?
I was going to say that also, at least with PC games, and I guess to a degree with the new consoles, because a lot of MMOs are looking at that as well. I know this would be the only time I mention it, but with Arma, when you have something like one of the jets flying around, there's a whole lot more processing required to load that because you're moving so quickly across the terrain. I think flying mounts might be that same sort of thing of that quick of traversal, like instant traversal with a waypoint system. That's one thing. That's okay. But flying, it's having a lot more processing power to load all that stuff for each player. So I think that might be a technical reason why we haven't seen flying mounts.
Well, I mean, if you
it could be why. Sure,
but this game does it the same way WoW does, where it's basically swimming in the air. Like there's no momentum to going down or anything like that. It's all
yeah. It's something else that's really bugged me. Air. Just like no MMOs I've seen have made like
Ion did. You actually did go faster as you went down. It wasn't actual like momentum based. Like it should have been. It wasn't really like real physics based or anything like that. You did go faster as you flew straight down. So at least they did that.
I cannot believe we're talking about Ion on this
show. Yeah,
You know, we've got five people here and we're still in Durant.
I like how Third went from Pokemon to Arma. That was smooth.
Right?
Yeah. Any chance they get to talk about Arma?
Totally, yeah.
There you go. Yeah, it's a takeaway, you get it.
Dragon's Prophet, you know, it's I mean, it's no Wizardry Online. But
all right, so we're gonna skip the Old Republic because I don't think anyone out there cares. How about Hearthstone?
I loaded it up because I wanted to see what had changed on it, and I'd forgotten how ridiculously restrictive their free to play stuff is.
Yeah,
where I could hide my helmet unless I paid them money.
Mm-hmm. Man.
So yeah, moving on from that, I recently got into the Hearthstone beta.
So this is a game that's pretty much blown up online that we have not talked about at all on this show. So that's the only.
It's not properly out yet, so you couldn't have.
It is in beta.
It is in beta. They're taking real money. The way that they're working with that is any money that you spend in the game to buy the booster packs or whatever, when the beta has ended, they're going to pull all your cards away, essentially. But you'll get all that money back in gold to re-spend in the live game.
Mm. Okay.
So at least you're not just losing it or anything crazy like that. But there is like a huge warning saying you are about to spend real money.
yeah.
No, that game is actually like...
I
kind of prepped
myself. Have you played many TCGs in the past? Are you a TCG kind of player?
No. I mean, like I played Pokemon back in the day. Mm-hmm. The actual card game as well as the GBA game. Or Game Boy Color.
Yu-Gi-Oh is the bomb. I play a lot of Yu-Gi-Oh.
I play a lot of Yu-Gi-Oh.
Like, I remember getting in so much trouble for like ripping up kids' Yu-Gi-Oh's cards that beat me.
Oddly enough, I was just old enough that I had gotten into Pokemon before Yu-Gi-Oh got big, and thank God, because I would much rather say I played Pokemon than to say I played Yu-Gi-Oh.
We ain't playing Yu-Gi-Oh.
Yeah. Dude, you're such an asshole. Why would you rip someone's cards up?
Okay, so seriously. What happened is like it was
what
like a
fuck?
It's like how we play. It's like we play for cards, right? We like bet a card, right? But that's it's like terrible, I lost, and I was in like I don't know third grade or something like that.
Yeah, just keep going down. It makes.
And I'm like, no way, you didn't beat me, and I ripped up a card. I got sent to the office.
Technically, you ripped up your card before you could give it to them.
No, I ripped up their card.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's what I would imagine. But this is Numerama we're talking about. The malicious asshole is sitting over there playing World of Conflict.
But no, my first card game was Pokemon. I dabbled a bit in Magic as well later on. And actually, leading up to Hearthstone, I actually had played a little bit of Soulforge, which is another free-to-play TCG on Steam.
Rory did a quick look off, right?
Yeah. So I got after watching that quick look, and they're actually kind of similar in some ways. But So yeah, Hearthstone, it's one thing I really like about it is I think it's a really good TCG for people who have never played one. The first thing it does is kind of load you into some tutorial matches. But the great part about the tutorial in that game is the game itself is so simple to learn, and the mechanics make just intuitive sense that when you're doing the tutorial battles, like, they don't even feel like tutorials. They're not like, there's not like some dialogue box popping up like every turn, like, hey, now go do this. Hey, do this. Like, it's not freezing the game, like telling you, okay, now you need to click on this to make this happen. And then this turn, you need to click on that to make that happen. Like, they're letting you play, like, within two or three turns of the very first tutorial match. I had the option of hit their minion or hit them. Like, they're giving you that much freedom. They're just kind of feeding you cards that they need you to use in order to deal with whatever. And each subsequent tutorial battle, like, teaches you kind of a new mechanic.
Okay.
And they make you go through those tutorial battles, and then basically you get a quest to play against a computer, so it's encouraging you to not go directly online. And the way they encourage you to kind of play more versus AI battles before you go online is that's how you unlock the different decks. So, like, the way the decks work is there are classes, there's a class for each of the classic WoW classes. So, of course, like, you know, the warrior, warlock, shaman, mage, druid, hunter.
Mm-hmm.
I know I'm forgetting paladin. And so, like, if you start off, I believe you always start off with Jaina, with the mage deck. And then, like, let's say you want to then, you can choose from there which one you want to unlock next. So I decided I wanted to unlock the druid deck. So I had to battle the druid deck AI and beat it in order to unlock that deck.
Oh, and then you take their deck away.
Then you unlock, I think once you've done one of those, or maybe even before that, you unlock the ability to build a deck, and the building a deck kind of works similarly, where you choose what hero you want it to be associated with, and then you actually kind of start building the deck from there, and they have, like, cards that are specific to the heroes, and cards that are for all classes. But the way that the actual mechanics work is that it's really simple. Each card basically has three numbers you have to worry about. They have their mana cost, they have their health and their attack. And the way the mana stuff works, the way the resource works in the game is much simpler than something like Magic, where you got to worry about how much land you have out there, tapping your land and things like that. But it is similar to it.
Yeah.
Where you get basically one mana crystal each turn.
You get one more mana crystal each turn, right? Or is it?
Yeah. Yeah. They replenish after each turn. I think you get a max of like 10.
Right.
But that's not to say that that's all you can have for those turns, because that's one of the big, like, strengths of the druid deck, for instance, is there's cards in there that just give you mana crystals for that turn. So, like, one game I got really lucky and got so many of those early on that I was able to pull out a card or a minion card that should have taken me until turn 6 to finally get, and I got it on, like, turn 3 because of the mana crystals I was able to get out there. But that's kind of how it balances.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, there is a little bit of resource management to it. Kind of weird thing to me is just like how does it feel stripped down? Like I know you've been explaining
it seems like it would at first because there are so few numbers for you to have to really worry about, and it encourages you to kind of use up your mana each turn because you're going to get it all back next turn anyway. But it definitely doesn't feel stripped down. Partly I think because like each of the different class decks play differently, similar to like what you see in like Magic with the different colors. And so you're kind of playing to the strategy of who you're playing against, which class you're playing against. But of course, you know, all decks are the same either. And they do add some kind of folds and wrinkles in there. Like there's a modifier that the cards can have that's called Taunt, which basically means you have to attack them before you can attack anything else. Because again, it's not like
key to this.
Yeah, it's not like Magic where you have to attack the minions before you can attack the player. You can always directly attack the player if you want, unless there's a card out that has taunt, in which case you have to kill that before you can actually attack anything else.
That's like a really core constraint of this game because you can imagine once you get to end game where your dudes are doing like 8 or 9 damage from what I've seen.
And like for instance with the Hunter deck, like that deck is very much focused on minions, has a lot of taunt minions in there. It makes it a fucking pain in the ass to kill the goddamn player. I fought that thing a lot of times before I finally killed the AI in that one. But there's like charge, which lets them attack the turn that they're played. There are, of course, you know, spell cards where you can cast like Divine Shield on something. So the first time it takes damage with the shield on, it just doesn't take any damage at all. There are heals that you can use. Like there's that's the thing, is like the minion cards themselves are fairly simple, and I guess you could say stripped down. But the overall strategy of the game, because of just kind of all the modifiers in the periphery, like right. it's a lot more complex than you would think it would be. Like Soulforge felt stripped down because it was kind of similar in the way with the minions, like where there were very few numbers to worry about. The part of what made it feel stripped down is that every turn you lost all of your cards and got new ones again. So it's really hard to kind of build a strategy with that because you didn't know what cards you were going to have next turn. So I think with Hearthstone, oddly enough, like just that alone is enough. Like you're able to kind of build that strategy out a few turns out.
Right. So cool. So yeah, overall,
it's really, really good. I'm actually enjoying it. Another nice thing about it too, it is a free to play game, or it's going to be when it launches. But the decks are actually very reasonably priced. Like the booster packs. They're like. Like 15 of them for, or sorry, is it no 20 decks or sorry 20 booster packs for like $15?
So and Blizzard is starting off at a reasonable amount, and then they'll start screwing you in the ass later.
Is what you're saying. There's five cards per pack, and at least one is guaranteed rare or better.
Which is kind of cool.
Yeah, but like that's not the lowest you can get. Like you can get with real money, you can buy as low as 2 packs, and that's like.
$1
or $3 or $2. It's real cheap. Okay. It's a couple bucks basically. Yeah. The one pack you can't buy with real money. You can only buy that with the in-game currency. So they have like one pack.
And that's part of it too. Like you're not only getting money for in-game in-game currency for packs, but you're also getting rewarded packs for doing certain stuff.
It has like daily quests that they'll add. Yeah. So like I have one right now to do like deal like a cumulative 100 damage to players. And so once I've done that, they'll give me 40 in-game credits, and it takes 100 in-game credits to buy a pack. And so like each day you'll get kind of a new quest. As long as you actually finished one, you'll get a new quest that will get you even more of those points. And I believe I don't think you earn those points just through normal fights, but you do earn them through arena battles, which you do pay money for. I'm not sure exactly how.
And I think that the arena battle system is like one of the things they're gonna change close to launch. So I don't. We've talked too much about this game, but
one thing I want to say because it is free to play, and some people are hesitant about anything free to play really. But like you do earn cards as you level up. So like when you're playing a certain deck, a certain class, win or lose, you do gain experience and you do level up, and different levels will offer different rewards. A lot of times it's a card. So you do at least get them that way. And a lot of people will say like, pay to win because you can just throw money at the game and get cards. But like, it's called trading card games. That's kind of,
I'm kind of curious about the progression. Like how much do those extra cards play a role? Like, does the default deck, is that competitive or is it the cards just like, so the cards are just like different play styles you can change, right?
Yeah. Deck. Yeah. The base decks, I mean, they did a good job of creating a TCG because, like, that's one really important thing about them is to keep them not pay to win. Like, even a base deck has to be competitive with the right
strategy. Right. But see, this says to me that no one's ever going to buy boosters because why? Like, why would you buy a booster for a deck that's already competitive?
People spend, like, hundreds of thousands of dollars on.
I guess so. I mean, like, they'll just make money off foils. They want a deck full of premium foils with all the special cards.
No, because you have, but like, you're conceit of a TCG.
A lot of it is like, it comes down to like playstyle. Like if there are cards that would better suit your playstyle, then to do that. Also, that's one other thing I forgot to mention. There is a crafting feature. You can actually like break down cards into arcane dust.
Oh wow! So it's just copying Steam cards.
Well, except it's actually incredibly smart because you can break it down into arcane dust, and you can use there are recipes to actually build certain cards. So if there is a specific card you want, you can actually just use that card.
That's clever. That seems fair.
So, like, why you'd want more booster packs is part of the core conceits of any trading card game, especially when it's competitive and you're playing with a lot of people, is that when you see someone else use a badass card, and you're like, oh my god, that card's rigged, you suddenly want that card. And stuff like that.
Yeah,
totally really just turns. Like owning lots of things.
I will say though, like the nice part about this game is if you see that, like, mm-hmm. rather than having to just blindly buy a bunch of boosters until you maybe get it, because it does have that yeah. crafting system, you can instead
yeah.
like get enough cards, maybe from boosters or other means, to just craft it yeah. instead.
Exactly.
But I would say though,
we should know
we're calling this a TCG. There is no trading.
Yeah, it seems more like
a division. It's a
CG. CCG.
Yeah,
CCG. It's a CCG. Collectible card game.
Yeah,
yeah.
Which
either way,
for them to kind of keep the economy balanced and. Mm. Especially with their crafting system, like it makes a lot of sense for them to not allow trading.
Yeah, because you can craft the best cards in the game in inverted commas. So like it's just straight, they do cost a lot, like in terms of dust to actually make them. But you can in fact get the best cards in the game. Yeah.
So do you see either something way, like putting a lot of time into this game? Just like this seems like something that seems like a nice trifle. But like, do you see yourself getting really competitive with this, or is this like a week long like tryst? And then
are you dabbling or are you delving?
Yes,
honestly, I think that given the pricing of those cards, I could definitely, like, as somebody who has enjoyed trading card games in the past a lot, but had a hard time getting friends in to play them, like physical ones and stuff. I could see very easily enjoying this one and putting a little bit of money into it, but not going crazy. And that is as somebody who has played a little bit of the Magic Duels of the Planeswalker games. They're, yeah. I think those are okay, but they're not quite like those are almost the digital magic that I would want if we just got rid of the Planeswalker bullshit.
What do you mean? Like the
I guess
character specific stuff?
The mechanics that are specific to those games.
Hmm.
Like it doesn't quite feel like.
Because I bought Planeswalkers like for $5 when it was on sale a few weeks ago, and that game does not try to nickel and dime you too much. It does give you a lot of ads for actual Magic cards, which is kind of strange. But like, you get everything mm-hmm. in the game. Like everything in the game is there for what you pay for it. So that, I don't know. I'll have to play Hearthstone. Well, but
I guess my biggest problem with it was like I don't think there's actually deck building in there, is there?
No, there's no deck building in Magic.
Yes,
nor is there in Hearthstone. Like
yes, there is absolute deck building.
The deck building you described in Hearthstone was the exact same deck building that's in Magic, is you unlock cards and switch out cards in your deck for other cards.
No. You can really build a deck. You can the only restriction they make is similar to Magic, where you kind of have.
So the character just determines your intro cards, and you can go from there and mix and match.
Yeah, it determines it, like the character determines the class. So if I choose, Jaina, that means I can use mage cards.
Oh, that's
right.
You also have the character abilities. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I can use mage cards, and I can use neutral cards. I can't use like a druid card in that deck. But I can put whatever cards I want to in there. The only restriction they put really is. On pretty much most cards, you can only put up to two of them. Your deck consists of 30 cards, and there are some powerful legendaries that you can only have one of.
Okay.
Now, Durin,
so what I've learned today is that Durin likes collecting things.
Well, no, I have a question for him. Did you get into this from the WoW side or from the just CCG online side?
Kind of both.
Because I'm curious why you haven't looked into Card Hunter.
Oh, we can talk about Card Hunter.
We'll talk about Card Hunter another day, but I'm basically okay. Planting the seed, hoping Durin will play it.
I've no
play Card Hunter.
Look into it.
It's Card Hunter is not anything like what you just described. Card Hunter is only similar superficially, but I guess when it comes to people
talking about really good online CCG or TCGs, these are the two I hear: is Hearthstone and Card Hunter.
And Card Hunter.
Okay. Yeah.
Card Hunter is not really a CCG.
I know, that's what makes it awesome.
Yeah.
Thankfully, from Durin's what he's been playing segment, I've pretty much covered everything I've been playing, which is pretty much just Pokemon and a book, and I'll talk about the book later. So we'll move on to someone else. We do want to make this quick. We're already at an hour. Let's go to Noob, because he's doing the least this week. What's up, Noob?
Doomage.
How you doing?
Hey, Noob.
Doomage.
Hey. Doomage? Mage Knight?
Oh, Doomage.
Well, why?
Oh.
You're in the middle of a match? Are you in the middle of a match?
No. I exited the game. I'm reading
it. I can confirm this. He did exit the game.
Yeah, nice. All right, Mage Knight, let's do this. You've been playing some Kerbal Space Program.
I have
been playing
some Kerbal Space Program.
But I've heard that you've been playing it for like over 100 hours, and then I was like, all right.
Yeah, I've got about 100 hours in Kerbal. A lot of it's idling, but a lot of it is also actively doing things.
Some of it is idling because you're waiting to get to space.
Sure, yeah. A lot of it is just kicking it alt-tab in the background as stuff travels through space. But it just got updated recently, 0.22, which adds the first part of the career mode, which is this progression-based mode where you start with a very limited subset of parts. You have to do science to unlock more parts. So it takes what was an interesting sandbox and moves it in the direction of a like actual compelling space program simulator where you're thinking about like, okay, so like I've got this mission out here. I'm going to go here. I'm going to do these things. I want to return this capsule to the planet so I can get this science.
I was actually wondering,
like, I loved your discussion of you have to do science to get this.
You have to do science. So what you do is you take, like, so the first thing you do is you build a rocket, like a missile, basically. It just, like, kind of travels up to the upper atmosphere, hangs out there for a minute. And what you can do is your capsule has this thing called a crew report, which is where your dude just radios in and says something. So you'll get, like, 15 science off that. And you'll do that and you'll unlock your first amount of things. And as you do things, I should say, you can't just farm one area for science over and over again. As you do more science in one area, the amount of science you get out of the area decreases. So, like, you'll do crew reports out of upper atmosphere for a bit, and you'll be like, okay, so I can't get any more science out of this, so I go to orbit. You'll do crew reports from high orbit, and then you'll run out of that. But then by that point, you'll have this thing, a canister you can stick onto the side of your ship that has some mysterious goo in it you can observe under different circumstances. So you'll do that, and nice. You'll, like, yeah. So, you transmit this data back to base, which requires electric charge, which is interesting. So it's like this sort of gating resource. But and then for the goo stuff, you can only transmit 40% of the science back. So you have to get the goo back into the planet to get the full amount of science. So it puts a lot more emphasis on keeping your ships intact and bringing them back to the planet.
So what you've kind of done is rolled in an economy and a sub-objective tree linked to science. That's kind
of
cool.
I don't know if it's a subjective tree. It's a very loose way of, like, this is how you should proceed with the game. Like, there's
a proper series of tutorials in the game, but this is actually like a like sort of dynamic tutorial where it's like, okay, so you're gonna learn how to build a simple rocket with little like 1.25 meter parts, and then you'll sort of learn like dynamically. You'll be like, okay, now I need to get to orbit. How do I get to orbit? Now I need to get to the moon. How do I get to the moon? And like you'll just start, like, pushing yourself. And like I've actually been playing this vanilla like for the first time. I'm playing with, like, no mods because I feel like I want to, like, be challenged to do things that are hard and get rewarded for it. And it feels so good. When I got my first moon mission back, I got, like 5 bajillion science, and I felt, like, amazing.
Nice.
Like, I had planned out this mission. I executed it. Actually, the first part, it didn't go perfectly. I can tell that story if you want. But
Go ahead.
Please.
Okay, so my first lander, I'm not very good at landing things. It's very difficult to get something onto a surface of another body and bring it back. So my first lander didn't have enough delta V to get back to Kerbal. So I was like, okay, shit, how do I do this? So I was like, I gotta build a rescue craft, but I only have these 1 meter, like I have these one person crew capsules. So I built a ship.
Because everything's not unlimited resource wise. You don't have.
At this point, I only have the 1 meter or one person crew capsules unlocked. So I was like, so how do I get two people back when I need one person piloting? So I stuck two like capsules like nose to nose on top of this rocket. It looks real dumb. I have a picture of it in my Steam.
It doesn't matter how it looks so long as it flies.
Yeah, exactly. It's so long as it flies. So I get that out, and I was like, okay. So I originally built this as a lander, but I'll land next to the guy, and he can get in, and we can go back to space. But then I realized that my only lander also didn't have enough delta V to get back to Kerbal. Because I'm really bad at landers, apparently. So like, okay, shit. So I have two ships. One has plenty of fuel, but not.
Actually, can you slow down and explain to the audience what a delta V means and what you actually need to get enough
science
delta
terms.
V?
Delta V is literally the change in your
velocity.
So it's the amount of sort of thrust you have. That's not true, but
acceleration. It's just straight up acceleration.
It's acceleration without the time component. So it's just saying like this is I could go from 0 to 100 meters per second, or I can go from 100 to 3,000, which is important because velocity in space determines a lot of things. So I had a ship in orbit that had plenty of fuel, not enough to land and get back, but enough to sort of get back to Kerbal from orbit. So I was like, okay. I have a dude on the ground. So I was like, how am I going to do this? So what I do is the lander still has enough fuel to get into a circular orbit. So I do that. I put the first lander in a circular orbit. And then I get them close enough. And then I manage to kill velocity. I get within like 300 meters. And then I take the guy. He EVAs outside of the original lander. Uses his little like jetpack to fly across the 300 meters and gets in the other ship. And then I fly back to Kerbal.
Wow.
I was like, this is the most like Apollo like hack shot. Like, something went wrong, and we have like 5 minutes to figure out how to fix this with what we have on hand. I was like, so I was pretty
this
proud
is
the
of famous
that.
Table of parts from the Apollo.
Yeah.
Awesome.
It's like, hey, we got all this crap. We got to find a way to change CO2 out for oxygen.
Yeah, exactly. So
that's cool.
That sort of thing is it happens all the time in Kerbal, and it's part of what I love about games. It's like just sort of the crazy shit you can pull off. If you know things about science too, like if you know things about orbital mechanics, there's actually tricks you can pull. Like,
because like the game actually tries to be realistic.
Yes, so the game is as realistic as you can get without being super hardcore simulation-y. You'll get things like it was aero braking. So like as you hit atmosphere, you'll slow down. So you can abuse that on planets with atmosphere, where you can sort of like slingshot your ship around, and it'll hit the atmosphere and slow down a bit. So you can decelerate without using fuel. And there's the flip side of that is the Oberth effect, where you can sort of like use gravitational slingshot to sort of get yourself extra delta V where you couldn't get it before. And that's not something that's part of the game. It's not something the game teaches you, but if you know about it, you could sort of set up these maneuvers that utilize it. So it's in a way, it gamifies physics, which is awesome. But it's so cool. So
I like this because you're a physics, what would you call it, a physics major or a physics student? Yeah,
third year.
Yeah, exactly. And, so So you're seeing things in the game that make you excited. We can hear that, which is kind of crazy.
This game is, if you are interested in orbital mechanics and stuff, this game is an excellent starting point because it teaches you a lot of things just naturally. It's like you learn about what an apoapsis and a periapsis is just by playing this game. And those are actually those are things that you'll learn. You'll learn that your altitude of your orbit depends on your velocity or things like that. Like interesting little physical things.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
So yeah, so basically it's so,
what is your, like, are you planning to make space stations and go to the outer solar system, or like where are you planning to go with Kerbal?
There's not a lot of point to making a space station in career mode at this point, because like I said, repeated measurements of space in the same place with the same measurement won't get you any, like, it's diminishing returns. So building a space station would just be a challenge. I guess I could do that. I've done it before. I built a small space station in Sandbox, but
I guess I could build a space station or whatever. I don't really care.
for career, you can make a space station. You can do your fueling station where you sort of like dock a bunch of fuel tanks to a space station. You can kind of dock ships there to get some of your fuel back after you launch them into space, which is really good.
Yeah,
I could do that. I guess that would be worthwhile.
Can you make a? I'm just wondering what you can do in Kerbal. Can you do an asteroid way station? Can you do that?
You can put stations out. Well, I mean, there aren't any asteroids, like free floating bodies. There are planets and moons. There's about I don't know off the top of my head how many there are. 5 or 6 planets, and maybe like another sort of handful of moons. And you can put refueling stations out there. It'd be hard.
Is it based off of our solar system?
It's similar to our solar system while not being identical. Like there is a Mars-like planet that is just outside, Kerbal.
Noob, I like how he named the number of planets and moons in his solar system and you still asked whether it was based off ours.
No, he said,
I mean, in relation to like a gas giant,
there's a gas giant, there's a small planet at the center that's like really, really hot, there's a Mars-like, it's pretty similar to our
Cynic, he said 5 planets. There are more than 5 planets in our solar system.
That's why I was wondering why you asked.
No. I mean, like, those 5 planets, are they modeled on our solar system?
They are modeled after solar system planets.
Nice. You don't get it, Cynic. Jeez. But, I just love that there's actually this. I'm really curious about Kerbal Space Program because the nature of it. Minecraft was another good game that did this where I'm not sure if Kerbal has done this, but Minecraft has like a school license, and there's actually a person developing like a school version of it for people to use all these different iterations of it.
Yeah, but it should exist.
Like if there's anybody who listening who originally subscribed to this podcast for Guild Wars 2,
I'm sure the developers are exploring this. I mean, they're also not done yet. Like when I talk about this career mode, like the science bit's just the tip of the iceberg for the career mode. There's still there's sort of hints of an economy where things cost credits and have stock. So eventually there will also be a money component where I think you're probably like completing missions for money and using that. And that's going to be even more interesting because not only are you going to be able to have to unlock things, you have to pay for things too. So you have to start thinking a lot about just like, you can't just like throw together this crazy shit. You have to like think about part economy.
No, Cynic, what needs to happen is some physics professor needs to make this a year-long course. Like part of your grade will depend on your skill in Kerbal Space Program.
I would be a lot more interested in taking a physics class.
Yeah, I'm going to be doing orbital mechanics later this quarter, and I can totally use Kerbal to practice, I guess. It's close enough that you would be able to use the equations.
Anything else you want to talk about this week? Mage Knight?
I've reinstalled.
You've been playing a bunch of other stuff. I just don't know how much of it you want to talk about.
I don't know. I don't think I've been playing particularly anything interesting, but I reinstalled World of Tough.
Just tell me about your total War, like, walk through the past.
Okay. Your lack of roamage in Total War.
Yeah. So when Rome 2 came out, I thought about how much I wanted to play more Total War for some reason, but then I didn't want to pay $60. So I started installing a little Total War game. I started with Empire. For I think because Noob convinced me to.
Nice.
We played once, and it's a 15-gigabyte game.
Once. And I remember, I don't know, I think my opinion of the game actually went down when I replayed it, because I remember liking that game a lot more than I actually now, because, I don't know, something with that game, most people don't like it very much, but some people love it.
I bought that game for $90, and I was on those forums defending my purchase and being like, this game was worth it! Stop complaining!
Noob loves that game.
Nice.
It's got good parts to it. And then I reinstalled the Shogun 2, which is actually a good game.
Shogun!
Yeah.
Shogun's
good. Wait, what's that horribly racist line? It's like dishonorable defeat or something. Oh,
yeah, something like that.
That game is horrible.
The voice acting in the game is terrible. But
but overall, how do you feel about Rome? How many Total War games are you going to play? Just the two? I have the impression that you kind of... Okay.
No, cool. I ended up just playing those two, because after that point, the fire died, and I was like, okay, I'm done. I'm good. I've satiated my Total War desire. Because those games ended up being, those games are entertaining, but in the end, I find them kind of tedious, because they ended up being sort of the same thing over and over again, in sort of varying amounts. Like, you'll have, you have two guys, they're opposite sides of this map, with some maybe trees in the middle, some hills, and you kind of clash, fight, and one person wins.
And you just described all strategy games to me.
I described all strategy games, but there's no, there's nothing clever in Total War. Like, there's some campaign map stuff that changes between the games that can be sort of interesting sometimes, but on the most part, I don't know. That series...
What's your gold standard? What are you comparing it to? What do you think is a...
That's the thing. The Total War occupies this niche of, historically accurate real-time strategy game that sort of is... Mm-hmm. Dominated by them, and there's no real thing to compare.
They are what you compare other games.
Yeah, they are the gold standard, which
I
don't know. If anything, it's a challenge for developers, but yeah.
Well, it's not sad, because it is an excellent series.
Yeah, those series...
It's a great thing to put as a standard.
Those are incredibly well made, high levels of polish, really, really incredible. I don't know. I don't think they're... I feel like there's a sequel waiting for the Total War series that could change everything and make it better.
Shame for Dispray! That's the line.
There we go.
That was the line. Shame for Dispray. That was the worst. They probably just had a white guy doing a horribly exaggerated Japanese accent. That's horrible.
Troops are running!
Now you just make me want to play... Now you just make me want to play Divekick. I don't know. Alright. Moving on.
Yeah.
Thanks for that, Mage Knight. It's so great to have you on the show. You'll be sticking around, I assume, for the news section, or do you?
Yeah, no, sure.
I'm not.
I would love to.
And Noobarama, are you ready to talk about what you're playing now, you bastard?
Yeah,
are
you, to go and play get Skyrim? Something. I have to go get Chestnut. No, I
can talk about what Noob's been playing for Noob, because I know exactly what he's been playing and how he's been playing it.
Go ahead. Let's try that.
Let's try this.
Hi, I'm Noob. I'm playing Hearts of Iron. It's a cool World War II strategy game, a grand strategy game by Paradox. And I have a lot of fun with it. It's really good. It's a good game. that's
this is good. This is good. Keep going.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really accurate to his total description of
Noob. What have you been reading?
That's actually more interesting.
Alright, go. Answer, Mage. What have I been reading?
I've been reading this book about sort of the life of life of Soviet war prisoners of war in from the years 1942 to 1943. It's fascinating. Uh-huh. It's totally really fascinating. And I was reading this one about. I've been reading about gunshot wounds on the German Eastern Front.
Guys, I just realized something. We don't actually need Noob on the show anymore. We just have Noob here as Noob.
Oh,
Yeah. I want to play some Democracy. That can be good.
Nice. All right, New Brahma, you asshole. Tell me about Democracy 3. What the fuck is Democracy 3?
Sorry, Democracy 3, people like to joke like Hearts of Iron and those Paradox games are just all sliders and graphs. And there's no gameplay to them. Well, I think they're thinking of Democracy 3. Essentially, what Democracy 3 is, they claim it's like the most in-depth like political strategy game ever made. The most complex political strategy game ever made. That's on the Steam front page.
Isn't it the only political strategy game ever?
Well, there's that Stardock like political machine 2012.
Oh, right. I forgot that.
But yeah, so I've been playing this, and essentially it is literally sliders. It's a turn-based
Holy
strategy
shit, you're not game. Kidding. It's just like a,
yes,
a bunch of icons with lines between them.
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
Essentially what it is you can play as the president of a number, like six countries, Germany, Canada, Australia, US, UK, and France.
Believe being the prime minister?
Yes, or prime minister. And it is literally what the screenshots show it. It's you start out, the main page is just a web of different policies and issues in your country. You have a certain number of political capital. It shows you your budget, and it shows you, you know, deficits and how much surplus you're getting. And it is, you just play around and get reelected and make your country a better place. That is literally the game.
So is it just like a series of like pop-ups or like this crisis is happening, how do you respond? Or is it like,
it's that as well as managing the economy and making sure you get reelected. So essentially it's Re-Election Simulator 3, but at the same time, sometimes they're like a monkey wrench, like a terrorist attack or things like that. Which are random, and then there's also crises based on the policies you choose. So, for example, I played a game where I sort of fucked everything up. I jacked up taxes to 100%. I defunded all police and military, no healthcare. Essentially, what started happening is vigilante gangs start roaming the streets. That was one problem that I started having due to the high rampant crime. And then inner city violence, street gangs, a black market popped up because high taxes, tax evasion, you know, just horrible things. And it's sort of fun to watch everything fall apart. They sort of have a bunch of reacting factors. So, for example, because crime was so high, there was an event where a superhero came along and crime went down. This is the reason. While this seems cool, it shows the sad state of your society today. It's sort of like, it's very tongue-in-cheek, some of that stuff. On the other hand, there's also things like obesity, like serious things. Well, I guess inner city violence is pretty serious. But ghettos start forming if your GDP is so high and like immigrants start coming to your country. It's like managing your country, not just like the budget of it and re-election, but different things that come up. So
some detailed like policy management.
Right, exactly. So there's anything from like very contentious issues from abortion and gay marriage to something obvious like taxes and social services. And I wouldn't say it's complex as it is just there's a lot of different things you can play with. Because at a certain point, I wouldn't say it plateaus, because when you get to a point where your country's doing really well and you're like economically and politically, then they throw like a wrench, like a terrorist attack or like, I don't know, bird flu.
Or your daughter gets kidnapped and you have to give your presidency to John Goodman for a few days. You can't.
Oh, yeah.
Or something like that. Right. But
the worst plot arc and worst and best simultaneously.
Right. So it's like it's as complex as I could see an indie game making, like an indie game being, but it's not as complex as I would have liked it. So it is quite simple. I think like everyone can really pick it up and play it. It's very intuitive. It's very like, you look at the screenshots and it's so simple. It's literally just like a white background, blues and reds. It's very visually appealing to play, despite it just being graphs, pictures.
Yeah,
and
it's got
like
a very
really
clean look to it.
Noob?
It's clean. And when Noob says visually appealing, he means it is a bunch of icons on the screen with lines of them.
That's good.
That is
Noob. I struggle constantly to understand your idea of fun.
No, it is fun.
And games like this do not help in any in that regard. Noob, you have to realize I have 360 people on my friends list right now.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. You are one of two that own this game.
Yes. I am, like, even me who plays these games along with people who are weird and play games like these. Let's see.
To be honest,
I am one of three.
To be honest, I was actually amazed that there was another person on my friends list that owned this game.
But yeah,
it's
cool.
Introduce you to that person, and they will have babies, essentially.
Well, what I was going to say is, so I just want to tell like a little story of my game. It's I played as Canada, and essentially what I did is I became a socialist police state.
Okay.
And it was really socialist capitalist.
Well, just like real Canada. I mean, let's
like
be honest.
Real Canada. Yeah. So I like
free healthcare and all. Jeez.
Things I didn't care about. So maternity leave was illegal. You can't have paid maternity leave is not a thing. That increased efficiency that made capitalists happy, and to make environmentalists and socialists happy, I jacked up like taxes. I increased funding for schools and healthcare while cutting down on employment insurance, state homes, pay for elderly people. Sort of wanted to do like the Logan's Run thing where all of the old people died, made a productive society, all the while maximizing all police. So there's different police things you can put in to the point where I don't think you can ever make the game not Democracy 3. So everything constantly is a democracy. But I got to the point where I had curfews, so you couldn't be out in Canada at 1 a.m. to 6 a.m. Police drones everywhere. Every policeman was armed with a submachine gun, things like that. I made my country a better place. But it turns out liberals don't like that, so every other turn I got assassinated. So, yeah. So watch out for that. What happens is if people don't like you enough, they religious people, capitalists, capitalists form like a secret Brandenburg group, and they
wait. Can the environmentalists attempt to assassinate you?
I think they do. Nice. They also like
of course they would. It's got your Greenpeaces and stuff. They're like,
yeah.
Do they always fail?
Well, no. The weird thing is, as someone who had like police drones and like you know curfews everywhere, I still got assassinated. Like a police state should protect me, but it failed. Yeah. But. Yeah. I destroyed organized crime. I destroyed poverty. I'd assume because just poor people were killed. But yeah,
caught you while you're outdoors on your nightly baby seal kicking.
Spot. Oh, I also had. There's a death penalty policy as well, and the slider goes from like serial murder to only, and then at the other end, most crimes. So I would assume if you were out at night, you would be killed. It is very tongue-in-cheek like that. It's like quite funny to just see how countries run. But yeah, I found it to be a little bit easy other than the assassinations, which kills you. So yeah, if the price is a bit steep. It is $25, which for a game like this, it's a bit much. But if you do pick it up on sale and you just – it's something you could really just play for a little bit and then quit. It's not something you have to sit down for a long time. Watch some Let's Play videos because you can just learn how to play the game just so that it's very simple and intuitive.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool. Anything else you've been doing, Noob? I know you've been reading some books, but we'll probably save those for the plugs at the end of the show.
I watched South Park for the first time in four or five years. It's still really good.
Is it still good?
Any episode in particular or what?
Okay, I watched episodes 1 to 4 in the new seasons. Well, actually, 1 to 4 was a rerun. But and it's fucking hilarious. It's I think there was one about the George Zimmerman thing. The other one was about Minecraft and what is it? What was it there? What was the Minecraft?
It was those TV shows that are like murder mysteries or something, but also romance
novels. Lots of sex, yeah. And it's like informational porn or something, murder porn or something.
Murder porn.
That was really good. I was laughing like crazy on the bus. And like,
I find that brand of humor is pretty hit or miss, but when it hits pretty bad or pretty well.
Really well.
Yeah.
The other one, I already forgot. I watched it like 5 hours ago and I forgot. Yeah.
Cool. And let's move on. What's up?
Monuments Men is going to be the greatest movie of all time. That's my most.
I'm going to watch Prisoners. I'm probably going to try to watch Prisoners today or tomorrow, and maybe Gravity as well. Prisoners is the one with.
I thought it was going to be shit.
Sir?
I thought, like, Gravity would be bad.
It's supposedly really good. Have you seen?
Apparently, it's really good.
Okay, cool. I need to see it. It might make me mad because I'm really curious to see how they do relative velocities in that movie.
Well, not very well, apparently.
The scientists are really pissed off at the movie.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting to see if I can ignore the clear ridiculousness for the interesting plot. But the movie I really want to watch is Prisoners, which is Hugh Jackman and Jake Gyllenhaal in like.
Oh, Hugh Jackman is from action. Your nation.
Yes, he is. But moving on. So who have we done? We've done me. We've done Noob. We've done Agent Up. We've done Durin. So all that's left is Doubleton. Lucky last. What's up? What have you been playing, Thurbs?
Not much.
Cool. Let's move on.
Okay, sweet. Done.
I know
that's how you do a podcast.
Has to. Wait, who do you want? What are we going to do first? Stanley Parable or
I played Stanley Parable. I played, in terms of new stuff, Stanley Parable, the actual game, Nightmare House, a Half-Life 2 Episode 2 mod, and just like Arma, Spelunky.
Yeah.
Just a little bit of everything, all the greater stuff, Guild Wars 2.
I guess I can talk about Guild Wars 2.
I know you've probably talked about Arma a ton of this, but I'm kind of curious at what Arma looks like a few weeks after launch, because I've kind of. My armor playing has trailed off a little bit, so I'm kind of curious as to what you're up to. Just playing on public servers?
Yeah, I'm just playing on public servers. I've been playing around with, like, all the support stuff, I guess is a good way to put it. So just being a helicopter pilot, there's a lot of the public servers, it's just like, okay, we got this this big air, like, we have to take this town, clear it of enemy, or, like, AI or something. And so there's like a bunch of people will pile into these helicopters and fly over there. And then there's also support stuff. Like you could be artillery or you could be in a jet fighter, which I talked about earlier, or you could be in like a Comanche helicopter. Or you can be in this little rickety helicopter called a Little Bird that has like two miniguns attached to it. And that's what I like the most because that is the essence of providing air support, but also you're not just like sniping 1,000 meters away.
Yeah, it's entertaining. It's active.
Yeah, it's active. There's danger to it. I really don't like how people just fly up into Comanche while I'm like on the ground trying to like fight for my life, sort of thing. And this guy is just point and click, just like clearing the AO. And I don't really find the
for those people like that sort of Comanche, how it would work.
Comanche is a super heavy like gunship helicopter where you can just kind of sit. It has an auto cannon on it. It just wrecks everything.
That gives you an infrared vision so you can see. Like it highlights all the people you need to shoot. There's almost no skill required in it.
It's basically God mode.
And so what I like to do is jack the spot that lets people play as that and then instead play as the crappy ass helicopter. And that's just a lot of fun. In terms of that, another thing I've done is I've gotten the artillery and then just driven around. Because
you realize you've handicapped your entire fighting force.
Yeah, I want them to be handicapped.
If you were like fighting a real war, you'd be like you'd essentially be like,
I would be court-martialed or something.
I could take this helicopter that could save a lot of lives, but I'm going to have a sense of vulnerability.
I want to have some fun.
This other helicopter.
Well, because it is a video game, and I kind of have to laugh at the people who try and take it a bit too seriously. Military ranks.
It is people who are playing a military simulator.
Yeah, this sort of the audience they're appealing to be fair.
I know. And I'm not that audience, which is why I just love poking fun at it.
I got to join you some time playing on that server.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was Arma Minute.
Yeah. Well, and then just right. When it comes to like the map Altus, and I can't wait for if and when people make more maps for that game. It just looks aesthetically amazing, the amount of detail that's in there.
Yeah, definitely.
It's kind of like, I would love like an MMO to have that type of scale to like to tackle stuff like that.
You know what? I'm not
Go ahead.
In saying that, would you want it to be a modern or sci-fi MMO, or do you think a fantasy MMO could do it?
Because Planetside exists. Planetside's got a similar like level of scale to it.
Well, yes, and a little bit I played a Planetside. I guess I'll next time Loopy's on, I'll have him talk about it more. But I didn't like. It just seemed like a bit more grandiose. But I guess they put a bit more flair onto their flying vehicles, as well as it is sci-fi themed. So you want to be more grandiose. But it seemed to not lack the amount of detail. Like when you're walking through a town, whether it's destroyed and rubbled in the middle of the night and it's raining, and like everyone has flashlights. Because for some reason you just don't want to use night vision, or you're like, or just driving through a town that's active during the daytime that's still fully constructed. It doesn't have the same like with Planetside. You're going into a giant compound and there's a couple vehicles with you and whatnot, but there's not a lot of description to the area. It's just one big compound sort of thing with a bunch of little buildings around it.
Yeah.
And the guys at Bohemia seem to find a good way of, like, there's a dozen different types of buildings in this town.
Yeah, as opposed to Chernarus or Takistan, there's a lot more detail in, like, the sort of, like, square meter to square meter bits of the island, which is much appreciated.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I get what you're talking about.
Not everything is completely the same. The building blocks are a lot smaller, which allows them to have a lot wider range of description, almost like in the Minecraft approach.
Right.
Oh, well, just ability to make some, like, some crazy detail thing with 60 some odd blocks.
Ooh.
I don't know.
All right, we need to move on. We need to stop for now.
I only stopped to answer your question.
Yeah, no, that's cool. I love Mage Knight being on the show is awesome because it's not just me asking questions. What are we talking about? Stanley Parable or Nightmare House 2? Which do you want to talk about first? I think you wanted to talk about Stanley Parable last, right? Because you want to do a bit of spoilery stuff, or
yeah, we'll do that last bit then. So Nightmare House 2 is a game that's like 2007, I think 2009. It's pre Amnesia: The Dark Descent. But also,
yeah, it's definitely pre Amnesia: The Dark Descent.
Yeah,
thank you very much. God damn it! In many ways.
That now. But also, it's a apparently for some people a real pain to try and install. For me, it was a quick one-click download and install, and it worked fine.
Source mod? Really?
Holy shit.
I never had a problem with it.
It ruined...
Cynic, why don't you start?
what did you do?
Well, this is the thing, right? Because I think I'm one of, like, three people on the whole internet who've had this fucking problem. Or maybe there's many more, but no one has been making forum posts about it or making...
Because it's Nightmare House 2.
Yeah, like, I'm not interested enough in this game to pursue tech support for it, so it's like me and many other people.
A lot of time.
Sorry?
And you essentially spending a lot of time.
Well, I try to fix problems myself, and I also try to take on, like, suggestions by other people. So Doubleton suggested some stuff, and I tried that, and a bunch of other things happened. But, like, for me, my Nightmare House 2 is the add-on for Half-Life 2, so I bought Half-Life 2 for it. So Half-Life 2,
episode 2. Yeah, that's the one that
so Half-Life 2 episode 2. Exactly, and so I downloaded that, and so I launched Nightmare House 2, and the first thing it did was just kind of hung on the loading screen before it even gets to the start menu. So there's this stupid thing where it resizes everything, so it has this weird resolution for its opening cinematic. And then, so everything's like weird on my dual monitor setup. All my shit is starting to open on my second screen ever since I've launched that game. So it's just pushed everything around, done weird shit with resolution. And then even after that, it then just sat there without loading into the main menu for ages and ages and ages. So I closed the game and I alt-tabbed. And it turned out that to play it, it wanted to download, I think it was the real mod, oh, sorry, the Steam Mods SKU.
We have Source SDK. Tools.
Source SDK base 2007, which is 2.3 gigs, right? So it was just staying on the loading screen for the game, waiting to download 2.3 gigs in the background. That's what it turned out was happening. So I closed the game out, let it download Source Base SDK 2007. This was last week. I got it finally finished downloading. Doubleton and me were sitting on Skype waiting for it to finish. It finishes downloading, and then as it's installing, it crashes. Steam crashes. Everything shuts down, and the download is lost. So I've lost 2.3 gigs of download, and I have to download it again.
That's
so
not a lot.
That's
10 minutes of download.
Australia.
It's also Steam, so it wasn't going at my max speed. So it was taking like 30 minutes to 45 minutes.
Really, Steam doesn't matter.
Well, some parts of Steam don't. Like, games tend to, but for some reason, like, the SDKs never did. They just download like 300 kilobits or like 1 megabit a second, and it's just not fast enough. But yeah, so that happened, and so I was like, disturbed, not just go to sleep or whatever, I'll do this in my own time. So I downloaded SDK 2007, and then that just crashes on boot. Nothing, like, it boots and crashes. I can't do anything. There's like an error message which doesn't mean anything. It's like, it cannot find the Steam UI interface or whatever. And it's just like, what the fuck does that mean? And it turns out I had to download Source SDK base 2006 as well. And that's another 2.3 gigs. So I downloaded Source SDK base 2007, then I had to download Source base SDK 2006, and then I had to download Source SDK just by itself, which is another 500 megs. And this all, I was all figuring out today morning as to like when I was troubleshooting it. Once I got all of that done, Nightmare House 2 finally went past that like loading animation into the main menu, but it crashed at the main menu. So it brings up an error message, which is this very specific error message asking for this little text file, which supposedly tells it the properties of surfaces. And after some Googling, I found out that that text file only creates itself once you've played a little bit of Half-Life 2 Episode 2. And I had no intention of playing Half-Life Episode 2.
Well, you have to... the Steam games...
That can't be true, because I've never played Half-Life 2 Episode 2, and mine worked just fine.
You have to run to install them. If you've installed it.
Well, this is the crazy thing. Well, I've installed it. I had installed it. It's gone to the main menu, but I never played any of it.
Oh, so after, to actually like start a game. That's
I never started a game. So apparently that file, after some Googling, I'm not sure how it worked for you or why you had the file during, but I didn't. So apparently that file is only created after you've played a little bit of it. So I booted Half-Life 2 Episode 2 and played like 5 minutes of it and then saved and exited. That didn't fix it. Then I booted Half-Life 2, what's that island thing? The Lost Coast.
Uh-huh. Which anybody who has Steam should probably check out, because it's a free thing that just, it's developer commentary.
Everyone's played Lost Coast at this point. Come on.
Oh, yeah.
Cynic, have you played Lost Coast?
That. No. I have 5 minutes and I closed it. So I saved that, save game there and closed that as well. And then from there, I still had the same issue. So I was talking to Thelbleton, and he's like, oh, just reboot your computer. I'm like, okay, that's probably something I should try. I rebooted my computer, and after the reboot, it didn't even launch the game. It would just get to it didn't even get to the splash screen. I double-click it, and it just crashed and died. And it turned out that I had to go in and launch Source SDK Base 2006 and launch SDK Base 2007. Then the game would launch and do what previously did, which was go to just after the loading of the start screen and crash. Then I found out that if I just make a text file of the name it wanted and put that in the root directory for the scripts for that Nightmare House 2, it would boot just fine. And it did. It just booted just fine, but half the textures in the game were this purple checkerboard pattern, and I was like, fuck it, I'm done.
I'll tell you what, Cynic. After this, I will just stream myself playing it, and you will be able to experience
it. That's what is it?
So
I experienced it secondhand through Thurbleton, and that gets to what he's been playing.
Also, while you were playing Pokemon, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Naturally. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. I beat the fifth gym while you were playing
that. Pokemon. Why would he not be playing?
Hey, during this podcast, I made it to the Ice World, first time ever. Of Spelunky.
Nice.
No, but for Stanley Parable, it is a crazy game. Nightmare House 2, I'm sorry.
How was your experience? Now we talk about me getting to seeing the game through your eyes.
It's a lot of jump scares. I played the prologue, which is actually Nightmare House 1, which I think is just you need Half-Life 2 just without any episodes to get. But that's a 2003 mod, so who knows how many problems you're going to have with that. But yeah, it's pretty well done in terms of just like, I wasn't really that scared from it. I was just like admiring it as there were jump scares, but I wasn't like, it didn't immerse me as much. I'm not sure why. Maybe it was just because.
Well, it looked like trash.
Yeah. Well, lots of games look like trash. In my opinion, Enemies of the Dark Descent looks like trash.
I agree. Okay. But that game has a bit of like
that game can scare the crap out of you.
Bad, but has atmosphere.
SCP Containment Breach is the ugliest game in the world. Oh, and it's also the scariest game in the world.
So it's not the quality of the visuals. It's how well it can immerse you in the environment and all the different Half-Life noises and being able like the movement of Half-Life 2. Like you were watching the stream, I was doing some pretty dumb parkour stuff, right?
It lost all the fear with how much control you had over your environment in that game. Yeah.
And actually, I'm curious when I get an Oculus Rift, if that will change the movement at all. I need to ask, send a message to Patrick or something and see if that changes your skill when it comes to moving.
Yeah.
But
it's kind of crazy because...
Anyway, it did a lot of stuff that I appreciated from, like, a person sitting in a movie theater watching a horror movie. Like, oh, that's a neat thing. Like, you go to open a door and only opens some, and you look behind it, and there's, like, a brick wall there. And it's like, oh, crap, I can't go that way. And then suddenly a zombie breaks through the door to the right.
Yeah.
But you have a shotgun, so you just shoot him.
Exactly, and that's kind of where I fall back to. Like, when I made the quip of, no, it's definitely from an era before Amnesia, it's because I'm kind of with Patrick in saying that, like, not being able to fight back is now, like, the thing for fear in games, and I can't see.
We've known that for a long time now.
Like, yeah, exactly. So going back to this, a game 2007, it just felt odd. It definitely felt like a line in the sand was drawn when Amnesia came out, or Slender, whatever you want to point to as a non-combat horror game.
I think a good comparison for it is if you want to, like, it's an indie version of Fear.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
Especially Nightmare House 2. Because Nightmare House 1 actually takes place in an actual house. Nightmare House 2 takes place in a hospital.
Hmm.
Well, I mean, doesn't it start off in the house, though?
Well, the prologue is in a house.
That's right, yeah.
The prologue is episode 1, effectively.
Right? Yeah. That's Nightmare House 1. And then,
okay.
But, like, and did things like... He walks up to a it's from 2007, like, just keep that in mind. But he walks up to a radio, and there's a person on the other side of the radio who's like, I can't tell you why you're in this situation, but you need to do these things to get out of it. And
I'm a plot development meant to move the story along.
It was not worth the 5 hours for me. And Stapleton seemed like he'd had fun with it. How would you sum up your experience in that way?
I enjoy most content that it is Half-Life that is well made, or like Half-Life and Source Engine, I guess, better way to put it. Right. And I'm not sure why. I just I don't know, but something about it, I like it.
Cool.
Can't put my finger on it. It's fun.
So now we're going to talk about Stanley Parable. I'm not sure how many spoilers we're going to get into, but I do want to warn anyone.
Come on! It's been out for like a day. You really going to spoil it?
We'll do news. Okay. I don't know if you know this. I'm playing it right now.
I want to play it. I haven't even touched it yet.
That's all I've got to play so far.
Let's do news first.
It's hard to talk about it all without spoilers, though. Like, even if you say, like, what the game is, it's kind of a spoiler.
Yeah, I want to talk spoilers about it, but we will do news first, and then the last thing to talk about.
If I play the mod, does that conclude me?
No, because the demo is nothing like the mod.
Okay. But people who have played the mod, it's from posts I've been reading, it's like there's a lot of things from the mod that are taken into the new version, the HD version, I guess. Mm-hmm. But something that listeners,
the idea of choice is taken over into it.
I know about what the game is and what it's doing. So I guess in that sense,
that's kind of pretty much all I need to say. In that, I am not interested in that game.
Well, and really? the demo does a brilliant job of. Pretty much if you like the demo, which is free and you can get and you should get, within like 5 minutes or less than that, you will, like, the first few quips, you'll be like, this game is for me. I love it. I love the jokes that they're coming from. I get where they're coming from. Or this game is not for me. This is not what I find humorous or endearing or anything. So try out the demo. And if you enjoy it, then get the game.
Yeah. And I think that it comes down. There's like many caveats in that, right? Because the game is well written. I think, in terms of just like it's moment to moment writing, because it is a narrated game. I hope this isn't a spoiler to anyone, but there is a narrator in the game, who's speaking to you as the player. And he, in any given, like, if you take like a single quip of his or a single like element of what he says, it's actually really well written. And there's a lot of parts and there's a lot of elements of pacing that game.
And I think very well voiced too. The guy does a really good job of. Doing like kind of the different notes.
They got an older British gentleman, and he does a fantastic job. Yeah, I'm just going to say my perspective, and Doubleton, you can use yours as a counterpoint. Like mine was essentially that, yes, it's well written in the moment to moment, but if you consider it as a whole, at least to where I got to in the quick look, which is all I've experienced from it because I was done by then, was it revels in itself too much. It's kind of.
Yes,
it knows what it's doing, and it thinks it's being clever. And in a lot of cases, it is, but it's kind of just trying too hard in every sense, really. Like there's elements of it where there's two doors, and the narrative says, and the guy goes left. And something happens if you go left, and something else happens if you go right. But in both those cases, they weren't predictable results, but the fact that they were so divergent was highly predictable in and of itself. And yet the game didn't treat it as if it had that element of predictability. It played it straight in a way that got me really annoyed. It just didn't rub off right on me in the way it wrote, like the way it's written, and how much it does, especially with how long it takes for some of those endings to play out. If you've watched a quick look, you know what I mean. But some of them took like so long to even.
It's okay. Okay. Here's what Cindy means by that is.
Yeah.
There's the games that have been most popularized in this genre, that being like Dear Esther or Gone Home, seem to be telling more of a narrative story. But they're also, like with Dear Esther, you could take, like, there's a fork in the road, and the story continues off to the left, and there's something off to the right, but it's a long way off, and there's not really much payout versus the amount of time put in. The two things I'll say on that, this topic, is I think Stanley Parable does an excellent job of player movement. Like, I don't feel like having to drudge my way to anything. He moves fast enough that's like almost like a jog. He's not walking, but he's definitely not sprinting. But he's at a pace that I'm not pissed off about. The other thing, I
totally agree,
is that he's like, there's no correct ending. Every path that you take has a payoff. So like, there might not be a payoff that you're especially excited for, but. Mm-hmm. If you get the game right now, you'll be part of, like, there is a community effort to try and understand, not in the same grandiose as Fez, but trying to figure out all the different endings that are to this game.
So my problem with it, as I was trying to vocalize before, that some of those endings were a bit
dumb. Yeah. I will say, Cynic, I'm not going to say when or how, but there is an option for three doors. The narrator makes fun of you. And the mayor is like, the exact topic you were pissed off about, he acknowledges and points out, oh, you want this? You want three doors? Okay.
And that's what I mean. Like, moment to moment, that game is really well written. And it's just like, when you start looking at like some of the ways it just goes on and on, it waffles. I'm just trying to say that. It waffles in ways that I really don't like. And it gets itself and also doesn't get itself in weird ways, in my opinion. But
really?
How did you like it? Like, Doubleton?
I liked it. I'm still liking it, trying to figure out all the different stuff. There's lots of it seems to be a game that was catered to like the type of gamer that I am. I guess the one last thing I want to talk about this game, and it's pseudo, I don't think it's a spoil, like there's something in the game that I really liked. I'm not going to say where or how to get it, but I wish more games did this. And the only other game I can think of that has done something like this was a Call of Duty game. But there's a part in it that is basically a museum or an art exhibit to all the different art assets. And there's like a huge wall plaque of credits.
Hmm. Oh, nice.
And cool. Just presenting it in that way, I think, does the work required so much more justice. Like there's a room that is all the different versions of Stanley's office room, and like little descriptions on each area saying like, this is what the first stage of development was like, and then you get to see how it improved along the years and the months.
Didn't Antichamber do something similar?
Something similar. There was a cryptic, like...
There's that weird display room.
Yeah, there's a display room that I couldn't quite make sense of, but it was just like, I could tell this was something important that the developer put in as an Easter egg.
Yeah.
Nice.
But yeah.
But like everything else in that game, it was obtuse as fuck.
Yeah.
Well, let's just put it this way. Like, people out there, many people probably read Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And that is a fantastic series of books. If you haven't read them, you should fucking read them. Not for everyone. And again, like this game, within the first couple of chapters, you can tell if it's for you or not. But, like, Duren, have you read Hitchhiker's Guide? Or
no, but I was going to ask, like, you said, everyone should read it. Should I read it if the movie was... just fucking grating on my nerves.
Yeah.
Really? Well, I guess so.
That movie was terrible.
Just to read it, I think it's different enough.
Yeah, give it a shot. Like within the first couple of chapters, the movie you'll know whether you like it.
Okay.
Execution of the movie was not perfect, but
yeah, because like watching that movie, like that was probably one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
Wow, that's harsh.
maybe it's just not for you. Like, it's a lot of the.
That's kind of what I'm thinking. Like, that's why I'm not yeah. sure, is because a lot of it had to yeah. do with the way the comedy was delivered. It was just exactly. lazy and kind of about low budget. I don't know.
Well, it's flippant in a way that, like, it's like non sequiturs. Like, a lot of it isn't just straight up non sequiturs. Like, things that really don't yeah. make sense but are kind of funny. It's kind of like that. This game is very much written in the same vein as Hitchhiker's Guide. I won't draw any like lines between the plot of the two. I don't know enough about the game to be able to do that.
But I guess the biggest thing is that there's a snarky British narrator going back and forth between the two, yeah, movie and the game.
Exactly. And there's an element of flippancy and there's an element of non sequiturness that is very equivalent between the two. So if you liked Hitchhiker's Guide, definitely check this game out. But know that this game does stray into the third, fourth, and fifth books in terms of writing. And that's what I kind of meant when I said before it kind of gets self, kind of knows itself but doesn't. It makes the same errors as he does in some of his later books. But
and again, anyway, free demo. That's all I'm going to say.
Free demo. And how much is the game?
$15 bucks. $15. I think it's on sale right now for $12.
It's yeah. also on ModDB if you own any of the Half-Life games.
Well, no, that's not the same Stanley Parable.
Yeah,
that's the original mod.
Apparently, it's very similar in terms of like the writing style.
But the
similar writing style. But it's just it's.
I'd hope it's the same writing style. Yeah. It's the same guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like, so if you want to see if it's like your kind.
But there's also
game
a demo on, that's in the new.
But it's like demos are so 2013.
So that's what I've been playing.
Demos so 2013. New Brahma, 2013. We've covered everyone, so we can go straight to news.
Are you talking about Guild Wars, I guess, quickly? You want to hear about the Halloween stuff?
You know what?
Oh, yeah, reminds me. I think I have like 1,500 gems I need to spend in Guild Wars from like months ago. What can I buy?
You should buy any costume.
You could just get me a bunch of gifts, because you can buy gifts for people in Guild
Wars. Or I can buy myself a costume. Are you dumb? Come on.
Oh, I got my birthday present. That was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
There's
a scroll in there that automatically levels characters below level 20 to level 20.
Oh wow, really? Like repeatable?
You just double click levels up.
It's single use, but you get it every time you're. There's one time where you get it with the amount of achievements you get, because every 500 achievement points, you get like a reward of some kind.
Yeah.
Whether sometimes it's gems, sometimes it's just money or something, I think. And then one time it was. That scroll that leveled up.
Yeah.
The other time you get it is when your character has a birthday, which is kind of weird.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like scroll of experience can only be used by characters under level 20, immediately levels them up to level 20.
So for people who just reserved a bunch of character names at the beginning of the year and then didn't play them at all, this is perfect for them.
So now my...
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Guardian is level 20. And my Guardian and my Silvari and a couple of others are now level 20.
Nice.
Should I play that game for Halloween?
Well, I'll tell you about the Halloween stuff. It's a lot like last year. The Mad King Clock Tower is back. The Labyrinth is back. And there's just zergs of people running around in there. But it's kind of fun doing that for a little bit. What was kind of funny is some of my friends that I would play with on Yak's Bend have transferred to other servers for various reasons, mostly War versus World. But with the overflows, I ran into a couple of them. I just recognized names like, hey, how you been? So that was a neat thing. Like, while we're shooting this giant candy cane elemental that's hurling candy corn, or sorry, candy corn elemental that's hurling candy corn at us and just wiping all of us out.
Nice.
I'm just chatting up with friends. And so that's been fun. The change from last year to this year has been that the Mad King's son has risen from the grave or what have you. Mad King has a son and he's trying to get revenge on his father for stuffing candy corn in his mouth and locking him in a coffin alive and burying him alive. I'm not sure why he'd be pissed about that.
Okay, so what I want to know is...
Is it fun this time?
Are the costumes great? Do I want to...
Wow.
The costumes?
I haven't looked at the costumes, but on the previous topic of leveling up characters, I've begun leveling a Guardian, and just something that's nice and not nice about Guild Wars 2 is the fact that I've already figured out my level 80 outfit and my guardian is wearing it. And that's, I'm level 50 already.
That speaks to some of my deeper issues with Guild Wars, but yeah, that's...
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong about that. There's totally nothing wrong about that.
It's in those games, it's all about the progression. It's all about gear progression, and like that's the only thing that it has. It has nothing else.
I thought you meant costume.
No, I'm talking about progression. I'm saying that like if your character looks the same for 50 hours, it's not fun. But
I realize I have spent more on costumes than I have spent on the digital deluxe edition of that game.
That's gross. You're gross.
And I don't even play that game. Where has my money gone? Can I have my money back?
Anyway. Sorry to derail.
But at least not pay the sub fee.
But it's like, I'm thinking, if I paid the sub fee and I bought the game for like, I don't know. Yeah, maybe not. For the amount of time I played it, would the sub fee be worth it? Would it be the same amount of money? I'm trying to think.
Either
way, I was able to.
Noob is actually trying to break down the pay to play and buy to play markets, and he's realizing that for him at least, there's not much of a difference.
No.
It's the same amount of money.
Yeah.
You got played.
I played like 100 hours in the beta, and I burned out in the beta along with
that was arena that gave you that first taste.
I tried.
That
I tried
first taste. That was the entire taste.
I didn't burn out, but I burned out shortly afterwards.
Nice.
Anyway,
there was anything else about Guild Wars 2.
Is there a jumping puzzle this time? Is it required?
No, it's never been required. But the jumping puzzle, back. That is the Mad King Clock Tower.
Oh God, they just brought back the same one.
The fabled.
I'm installing Guild Wars right now.
One that had someone from the leaking, a former host from the leaking cast, break a mouse.
Yep.
Against a wall in rage, the Mad King Clock
Tower.
Are we talking about last year's
set? Yeah, last year's in it, and it's back.
Okay.
I don't know what they're doing yet for Halloween, because that hasn't happened yet, but I'm sure the Bloody Prince will do something.
I realized in hindsight, I had zero fun with that Halloween event. I don't know if I just don't like Guild Wars holiday events, or if it's just that one, but like...
What you'll probably like about this one is they've cleaned up a little bit about it, where last year... Because of the issues of the instance, they couldn't really have one person per clock tower. So it was a dozen people per clock tower.
Well,
which
it's not just that; it's just like running around the map to get stuff. And the whole the whole riddle thing was kind of interesting. But then when it's like 50 people like zerging around between these different like riddle points, I don't know.
That's something different.
I know it's something different.
The hard part I think you have with stuff like that is like in an age now where the internet, things like that are just ruined because we're all just going to go to a wiki page somewhere and just follow the guide.
Yeah. Have some self control. Okay, first of all, Durin, I need to confront you. So apparently, Guild Wars has added a dungeon finder, and you promised you would play Guild Wars when they add a dungeon finder.
Should we all play Guild Wars again?
No, I'm not doing
that. We meet again. I'm still playing it.
Durin promised.
I have not launched Guild Wars in over like 9 months at this
point. Durin, you made an election promise. Will you fulfill it, or are you going to...
Oh, it's election promise? Oh, then fuck no, I'm not fulfilling it.
Election promises never get fulfilled.
Yeah,
I don't know.
But, you did promise us.
If you do want to jump back into World versus, or not World versus World, Guild Wars 2, the World versus World side of it has gotten really active with the league just starting, so much so that there's like sometimes you can't even get on your server because it's
queued.
I have very little interest in WoW.
Okay.
Wait, what did they add?
The league. They've split up so that the first six servers will always just be fighting each other for the next 3 months, and then the next six block, and then the next six block, or something like that. They've grouped us into three different leagues, I guess, and we're basically fighting for a reward that all of us will get at the end of that time frame, depending on our rank.
You hadn't even started there, but now I'm not anymore.
Yeah.
To be fair,
if they added alliances, I don't know.
Well, the matchmaking in WoW has always been a problem, right?
They've cleaned it up a little bit, and
I imagine it must have evened out a little bit after launch. But I remember
not have so much data from the game being out so sure. long. And
the matchmaking isn't necessarily down, so. The issue, because World vs. World is notoriously not meant to be balanced, or at least they keep saying vaguely it's not meant to be balanced. Just I think it's in need of some major upgrades or just major reworkings. But this the fact that there will not be any major updates or minor updates to World vs. World for the next 3 months while this league is going on, hopefully means that the team behind it will have 3 months worth of time to work on stuff.
Just sounds like they're lazy. I just don't want to work on it anymore.
Yeah, because they're putting out updates every 2 weeks.
Yeah. So lazy.
Anyway.
Maybe 1 week. But, no.
But yeah, if you want to,
if
you're happy about the PvE stuff, Mage Knight, then yeah, there's definitely lots of stuff there. They've added a fair number of mini dungeons and jumping puzzles and whatnot.
All right,
I don't know.
My problem is. Guild Wars 2 back into my hard drive.
Here's where my problem comes with coming back to playing Guild Wars 2, and I'll come back in there. I'll check out the Dungeon Finder. But the problem
it's not
I have
Final
is,
Fantasy 14. That's my issue with the game.
No, actually, it's
a Dern impression.
That was his president election.
John F. Dern.
It doesn't have the Holy Trinity, and because of that, I've grown to dislike the combat in the world.
Wait, I thought you just wanted the Dungeon Finder. I thought you were all the getting rid of Dern Trinity. What are you
launch. I was at launch, and then I played it, and the combat is a goddamn mess.
No, Durin's just a Trinity boy.
I think he's onto something. I think he might be onto something. Like, the high level combat in the game feels kind of weird in a way that I can't put my finger on, but my
problem is that like you can have a game that doesn't have Holy Trinity and still have decent combat if you have proper support roles. But there's nothing like that. Guild Wars is a Zerg fest.
Probably part of the reason why I didn't get into the high level stuff is I played Engineer, which is like the redheaded stepchild of every class. So like no one wanted me, and I had no clear like role or what to do. So I just
I don't know why people. I remember like at the beginning, everyone was like, "Oh man, Guild Wars is gonna kill Holy Trinity. Holy Trinity, you shit." No, I kind of want it back. I just want to play.
Well, it's because. There is no Trinity, so what everyone does is just go, like, glass DPS sort of thing.
Right, and that's my problem with it.
Yeah.
The problem with it is, because everything is viable, glass DPS is viable, and therefore it's the only way to play now. So, either way...
I still see that. That's still a core issue with the design of the game. That's not really the...
Yeah.
Unless you're just trying to avoid going back.
I think it's a fundamental problem with there being no Trinity. It's just that that's how Guild Wars 2 did it, and it's not necessarily working for a lot of people.
It made me like going back to the Trinity, though, because it added structure back to the combat that Guild Wars 2 combat lacks.
Right. It's like living in Somalia and coming back.
The one issue I still have with the Trinity, though, is back when I played WoW, and I had a bunch of local friends playing, like a dozen of us, when it came to trying to get like either a 10-man raid or a 5-man group, not all of us could go because someone had to fill the tank role, someone had to fill the healer role, and all of us wanted to play DPS.
Yeah, yeah.
That's where Final Fantasy 14 fixes that, because you can level multiple classes.
Yeah. So yeah,
I had multiple characters. The issue was we all wanted to play our DPS guys, and
multiple character. So you could still bring that exact same character in, still get the loot that
He's saying he wanted to play. Everyone wanted to play the DPS role. I think he's what he's trying to say.
Yes,
like
everyone wanted to play the DPS role.
Everyone wants to be the dude who's like sitting up front, like and with giant numbers popping out of him and getting all the glory because he's doing all the damage. Like that's what every raider wants to be. Some people are pretty happy with healing, and those people are nice. Like I'm pretty happy with healing usually.
I love healing,
but I made a DPS character in Tor because I.
I need. I need. We need to stop talking about.
I'm sorry.
Cynic, what's up with news in the world today?
Before that, Cynic, you know what we need to do? We need to reinstall to the one and play it from the beginning to end.
You people are crazy.
How's that new Steam controller demo, Cynic?
How much that sounds.
Steam controller. It's like 2 hours of these. I mean, I haven't even talked about
it. Let's get onto that. So I'm going to cut this news segment down just to three topics.
I hear Watch Dogs got delayed.
It's going to be Watch Dogs, and it's going to be the Wii U sales. What do you want to do first? Let's do the Steam Controller case. It came first. Why not? Fuck it. Steam Controller, do you guys see the video of them actually using it, finally?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, they played Portal 2 and Civ Crusader Kings?
Civ 5. And then there was like, and then like another shooter of some kind too.
Yeah, I think it was Battlefield.
No, they played CS:GO.
CS:GO. The shooting gallery mission.
So impressions, Durin. You can go first. What are your thoughts about it?
Well, like Jeff has said, it's definitely not the controller that's going to just replace all other controllers, but it's a hell of a PC controller. Like that, like they showed in that demo that it's no worse a way of controlling a game on a PC than a trackball would be.
Yeah, I mean, it's literally a digital trackball. That's what it is.
Yeah.
With no edges to get your thumbs cut on.
Yeah, but I was actually incredibly impressed by that controller, and because again, like you look at the controller, just the static image of it, and you don't really understand how those pads are exactly supposed to work any better than necessarily a thumbstick or even, like, God forbid, a laptop trackpad. But turns out they actually seem to work pretty well. And I think one of the biggest things that helps a lot is the fact that they are kind of individually programmable to act differently. Mm-hmm. So you can have them kind of act like an analog stick, or you can have them act more like a one-to-one mouse.
Mm-hmm.
I think that helps a lot with kind of the variety of games that you can play with that controller.
That's kind of the weird thing I got from it, because I'm going to play the role of the non-believer, because I think that's where I fit inside. When they ran through that CS:GO segment and he goes to the training area and does all those headshots and shit, I couldn't help thinking that you could easily have done exactly the same thing with a gamepad, and it would have been almost visually identical to what he showed.
No.
Like, you wouldn't be able to see the difference. If they only showed you the screen capture between the two and you never saw the controller, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference between the guy using the gamepad and the guy using the gamepad.
I think you literally could not be more wrong.
Yeah.
Like the way that
give you that impression?
It was fluid and it didn't lock on automatically.
The way the camera movement, like, moved up and down, left and right and stuff.
So there's no acceleration, is what you're saying.
It's more that there's like a controlled smoothness, I guess, to an analog stick movement. And maybe it is to some extent acceleration.
It's acceleration. It's just constant velocity. The thing is, it's a one-to-one control, so you're getting a constant velocity movement.
Yeah, it looked like if I saw that, and it looked more to me like somebody was using a trackball mouse than a trackball mouse.
Really?
We don't know what I'm referring to.
I didn't get that feeling at all. Like a
it was just like using one of those stupid trackballs at an arcade. Like, it's totally like that. You roll it, it has momentum, and it keeps rolling until it friction stops it.
Like the kind you would use, like your thumb would be moving. Like there's usually a red ball or something on the mouse on the right side.
But that's not the case at all. Like when he took his finger off the trackball, the mouse the pointer didn't keep moving.
When he meant to make a continuous movement across the screen, what did he do? He flicked his thumb across the pad a couple times. Like, that's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's the same you'd be doing as a trackpad. It's a trackpad.
I guess so. Like,
that's what you'd be doing. Because there's no... It didn't... Because to get a trackball experience, it would have to continue moving after you've taken your finger off. And
the big difference of that, though, is... Really, we're kind of just talking semantics at this point, because they are similar with the exception of the continued motion of the trackball.
That's fundamental.
What I'm talking about is how the movement looks compared to how it would look with a controller. The trackball and trackpad movement, that if you're talking about just moving back and forth, like, that would look the same. I'm simply talking about the difference between how that looks and how it would look using an analog stick on a controller.
Only way I could describe what you're describing is on an analog stick, when you are moving from a position to, say, you're tracking towards someone's head as a headshot, what it looks like on screen is there's an acceleration from the zero position to a constant velocity as you move towards the head. Then it'd usually be a deceleration. Just like straight up, the cursor would move slower and slower as it gets to the head, because the human mind is obviously moving the trackpad further and further towards its dead zone. So you'd have an acceleration, a constant velocity, and then deceleration. That's how you'd move from the center of your screen to a headshot. Here, it just looked like it moved from the center of the screen to the headshot at a constant velocity the whole time without any acceleration. So that gave you that feeling of a constant, like a smoothness and a lack of
more direct precision, control, right? Yeah, more precise control than what an analog stick would have.
Right, and that kind of impressed you and gave you a feeling that's what you want. Is that what you're saying?
It is the only controller I think I would ever be okay with playing a shooter on. As somebody who plays a lot of PC shooters and doesn't like console shooters.
Because they're shit.
See, I feel like that controller would be quite bad for Twitch-based things because it just feels like it wouldn't be responsive enough, even compared to sticks. Like, maybe with precision is really? Better, but, like, sticks might be faster than it.
Wait, no. Sticks are good for precision-based games and consoles because there's auto-aim. If there was no auto-aim,
sticks are bad for precision in general.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. The trackpad might be more precise, but...
Yeah. He meant Twitch, but the cool thing about the trackpad is because there is no... You know, on a stick, you're stuck from the dead zone in the center, and you move it to the right or the left. So you're essentially getting half the range of movement as you would the trackpad, because you can straight up move your thumb from the far left side of the trackpad to the far right-hand side of the trackpad, and therefore do a complete turn, because you've essentially moved twice the distance as you could have with a stick with the same movement of your thumb.
Mm-hmm.
So you would potentially get better twitch reaction, as Durin's kind of indicating. With this, so in a shooter you can make a full turn without having to click a button or whatever it would be doing with a stick. You can just straight up move your thumb across the entire trackpad and do that turn. So I guess Durin's kind of, I see where you're coming from when it comes to the FPS example.
I think we'll have to wait till people get their hands on it, because I have no idea how people, like, if someone could theoretically get like amazing with at this trackpad thing, but someone could also get amazing at playing the game with their feet. Like it's just a factor of human skill.
Absolutely. And like, straight up, auto-aim is a thing, but there have been many cases where auto-aim has been negligible or bad in a game, and people have still become incredibly precise with it. Like, the original Halo had auto-aim, but didn't have as much as, like, Modern Warfare does today. And people were absolutely amazing at that game, doing headshots and everything with sticks. So it really does depend on the player as well.
I think the biggest thing for this that I'm hopeful for the Steam controller or the OWL controller.
The OWL controller?
It looks like a giant owl. It looks like an owl's face. Look at it. Look at the controller. It is an owl's face.
Yeah. Okay, I heard OWL, like the dude on the other side of the fence in...
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Okay, Steam troller, does that work? Does Steam troller work? Okay.
Stroller!
The option to... Because, like, when we play... Or when gamers play first-person shooters on PC... The biggest contention of variability is what is the mouse's sensitivity set at? And that can change from gamer to gamer and what your interests are. For some people with the new mice, there's like the option to adjust it on the fly, have multiple settings. So if you somehow have that option in the Steam Troller, like either with your profile settings for your Steam account or what have you, but the ability to adjust... The sensitivity of those things will greatly determine if this thing is going to be successful or not.
I would be shocked if they do not take that into account. Yeah. I would absolutely be shocked.
But as it is right now, I think...
Considering they're building it on top of existing games, they're kind of already taking that into account in a lot of cases because the game already has sensitivity options. So in some extent, you'll get it. But like, for example, you barely ever find that in a console game, aside from like ones which are like Uncharted or the bigger games, you're getting full sensitivity sliders and stuff. Other games like Resident Evil, like Durin, did Resident Evil ever give you a sensitivity like slider in the console version?
Wait,
Resident Evil 5 does.
Like, I will say I have no idea because by the time they went to that,
You played on PC.
I played 4 on consoles, but everything else, 5 and 6 were PC.
And then a question I have for
4 didn't give. Sensitivity, I think.
No, because it was on the GameCube.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it was.
Yeah. Anyway, what were you saying? What were you saying, Thurman? Sorry.
Well, then, like the other question, I guess to top off the topic was for Durin, is when it comes to like we're familiar with for controllers to just have like standard and southpaw and maybe one or two others. But with the Steam controller, you have it potentially has the option to just bind them to whatever. Maybe it has like a default. This is what Valve suggests or what the developer suggests, but you can adjust those how you want, hopefully. I mean, like, I guess it will depend on game to game. But, Durin, you recently tried playing Dust Force, right? Like a week or two ago?
Yes.
And you were initially just like, I can't play this game. It doesn't seem to have controller support. It's only keyboard, right?
Uh-huh.
Then I booted up the game, and it's a bind what you want your buttons to be on the controller type of game.
Wait, what now? I was able
to play Dust Force with the controller. I just had to choose what buttons I wanted it to be. I had to bind it on the fly, but they allowed me to do that in the game.
I tried to do that, and it wouldn't recognize my controller at all.
Then you have a crazy controller. I have an Xbox controller.
I have an Xbox controller.
Then you need to make sure it's plugged in when the game starts. I don't know.
No, it was plugged in. I have no idea.
But I guess, do you guys want, like, what, do you want just standard controls, or do you want just something where you have to bind every time you boot the game up the first time?
Didn't they address that in the video? I'm pretty sure they mentioned, like, but other games, controller or Steam will automatically try to adapt using, like, legacy controller settings or something like that.
If it's a shooter, it'll probably default to Call of Duty settings.
It'd be, like, the biggest fucking annoyance if every time you launched a game, I had to deal with that. I'd rather just have a base thing and I'll change what I don't like, because that sucks doing that.
Well, that one, did you enjoy it? Did you like being able to bind it however you wanted to? Or?
I did. It definitely came to, like, an internal argument of trying to pinpoint what felt right. But I like that because I played a level, went back, adjusted a few things, and then tried it again and again, trying to get the right feeling for it. But I don't know. Maybe it's just this is the first game where I could do something like that I've tried. Felt like a little bit of unease, like just unknown territory, I guess.
Yeah. Well, Mage Knight, we got Durin's reactions, and for some reason we've been picking on Durin. What were your thoughts, just in general, of the control? Are you convinced?
I think I'm convinced. It looks good. I think I still have to touch it to see for myself, but I don't know. Would I pay, like, $80 for it or whatever it's going to be? I don't know. I mean,
If it's 50 or under, I'll definitely probably get one.
It's not going to be 50 or under. It's got a touchscreen on it. Come on.
Oh, you're right. Bugger all. So yeah, under 100.
The PS3 controller has a touchscreen on it, and it's going to be like, or pardon me, PS4, and the controller will be like 50 or 60.
It's got a touchscreen and two high fidelity touchpads on it.
It looks like the ideal thing to play with my.
I think Valve would be very. It'd be very bad of them to charge more than $60 for that controller.
Do you think Hitbox or something is going to make a cheap version of the Steam controller without the touchscreen?
Mad Cat Steam controller.
Yes, Mad Cat Steam controller.
It's still got the haptic feedback, but no. Stream cost.
Indeed.
Order now.
I don't know. At some point, I think Valve kind of has to have standards that things have to meet, and it'll have to match the functionality of that control, because fragmentation is the worst in any kind of industry. Software, hardware, doesn't matter. But the kind of reason why I'm not fully behind the Steam machine concept is because fragmentation can ruin this or kill it in its cradle. But the last thing I want to point out with the controller is, did you guys see the part when they were playing the strategy game?
Yeah, Papers, Please in the strategy game is what stood out for me as a person.
So what do you think of that, Noob? How do you...
I think, of course, mouse and keyboard will always reign supreme in a strategy game. This is just a better alternative to controller.
Because what they do is... you can describe it. Go ahead.
Right. So what you can do is essentially you can turn both of the separate trackpads into one single giant one. So if you go from one side to the other on your right hand, you can go to one side on the other to the left hand, and it will register as one long swipe. So in a control or in a strategy game where you have to move your mouse from one side of the screen to the next, that is actually very, very important to have. Otherwise, you're just going to be like rolling with one.
Actually, I thought for this, that's what it was like for Papers, Please for the strategy game. Papers, I thought it was the right trackpad was the mouse, and the left trackpad was just the screen moving.
Yes,
but the difference between a whatever the Xbox controller version is, joystick. I don't know what it's called.
Thumbstick.
The difference between the thumbstick and the trackpad, it just seems like maybe you have a bit better precision when it comes to like acceleration or something. You need to quickly get to the other side of the map.
Well, I think what you can convey in a video is that there's a bunch of haptic feedback stuff going on in that controller, which sounds really cool as well.
Haptic feedback.
Also, it's a difference between using an analog stick to use your mouse and a touchpad, which are completely different things. One is usable. The other is not. I think some I've like on at least using my big picture, I've used like my controller as sort of like a to point my mouse when playing with games. It's horrible, and like using a touchpad won't be as nice as using a mouse, but it's definitely a lot more acceptable. So I can't see myself like playing Civ 5 if I have the option to use a keyboard and mouse. But it's like if you really don't want to, if you want to really lie on that couch and play a strategy game that badly, it's simply more precise and it's a lot simpler than using a controller. It would be significantly like a handicapping factor in terms of comfort and things like that while using the while moving around in the game. But it's, I guess, compared to a controller, it's a better option. But Papers, Please is what really stood out. It just, for that game where it's all about like mouse movement, I'd assume the person had a lot of practice with it, but at the same time,
I think he had a lot of practice, and I think that was an early level. I cannot see someone playing the later levels of Papers, Please with this controller. I have to say it right now.
Well, that's a mid level.
The
one they should. But yeah.
Right.
But for what it is, it compared to, I can't see anyone doing that on like an analog stick controller.
Oh no, not at all. Yes, it's head and shoulders above an analog stick, but yeah, as we thought it would be, it is not. It is not a replacement for the keyboard. And mouse.
I think it does fit that perfect like middle spot between the mouse and keyboard and traditional controller. Though it has the precision while maybe not the comfortability, because I don't see that.
My only worry with it is it's kind of an interesting argument because my worry with this is it does not have what I need it to have for a third person action game or your Assassin's Creed or whatever. Like those games,
right.
And Jeff's argument on like his counter argument from Giant Bomb is that, well, I already have a PS4 controller, an Xbox 360 controller, maybe an Xbox One controller. I'll have like so many controllers in my household that'll easily plug in my computer that will fulfill that purpose for me really well. That this controller doesn't need to fulfill that purpose because I can just use this for the other games. But
at the same time, Jeff also like prefers
owns
that
everything
kind of controller. Well, he prefers like, you know, an analog stick controller for shooters. So he's not the standard PC gamer.
But the argument stands for Assassin's Creed. Like I don't see myself playing Assassin's Creed with this when I have the option.
I think it's just like a mouse and keyboard where if you have a controller for a third person game, by all means use the controller.
So what do you guys think of this whole duality of this doesn't have to be good for third-person games because almost everyone has one of these other controllers? Is that fine?
It doesn't have to fight with... I think it's trying to get the middle ground that, like, you know, that PC games that want to be on... like, use a controller either in the living room or in front of your computer or something. But just, I think it's going to try and fulfill what, like, the mouse and keyboard need to be in... Or at least what the mouse needs to be. On a controller.
Like, I think the best stress test for this controller is to see like a strategy game being played. Not StarCraft necessarily, but just your run of the mill
World in Conflict.
World in Conflict's pretty hectic, but just like how many things are you able to manage at once using that controller and how fast?
Sure.
It's gonna be cool because and that's the weird thing is your stress test would be different to mine. Like for me, I'd want to see someone play Super Meat Boy and then Alt-Tab to like Castlevania for the PC. And if he can play both of those games perfectly on this controller and then maybe do some web surfing from his couch, that would sell me on it.
For me, can I use it comfortably? Like from a couch?
Yeah.
That would be my metric because that's all I would use it for. I mean, like,
put the thumbs?
On the pads.
No, but like when you don't want anything to move. Where do you like? You can rest your thumb right on a controller.
You'll just naturally find a center point. Maybe the vibration stuff will help with that. But I imagine you can just rest it at the center there, and it'll probably be fine. Okay. I mean, I don't think it measures. It's probably not like a stick where you press on it and it changes. It measures the change in your position, right? Like, so you drag your thumb across it to move things. If your thumb is still, I don't think it does anything.
But it's still but you can still. It does both actually. If you press on the left hand side of it, it registers as a left click.
Well, I mean, besides, I'm saying neutral position of your thumb, not pressing or moving.
Right. Yeah, so if it's neutral and not pressing, it should be fine. Yeah. But the weird thing is, like, the outside rims of those controllers are also buttons, and then you have the four interior buttons. So you're right, there isn't, like, any...
That's the other thing is, I want to see how responsive the clicking in the pads is. Like, if that's a natural motion that makes sense, then that makes sense. But if it's kind of awkward where it's like I'm trying to move and click and it's just not working very well, then that might ruin the whole controller.
I think a good game I'd like to see somebody play with a Snake controller would be Gunpoint, only because it does have the movement of a platformer, which you'd want to use a controller for, but it's also got the precision needed for the linking, the cross-link stuff.
Exactly, yeah. And I've always wanted to be able to play that game with a gamepad, but I think mouse and keyboard is kind of the perfect way to play that game, so it's going to be really interesting to see.
Yeah. My problem is it does literally occupy in the middle ground, as in, like, this controller will not excel at either the mouse or the, like, it will be one or the other. There will be no game that will be, like, this is the best way to play it. This will always be, you have to play it because you can't do the other
one. And that's going to be interesting to see if that holds true, because with the developers getting their hands on it now, like, it could straight up be some people do knock it out of the park with a good customization for that controller.
Yeah, definitely. That could be very interesting. That's exciting.
Yeah. Oh man, everything's getting crazy, man. It's only like 4 weeks till next gen or some shit. The Steam controller coming out next year.
Yeah, but why do you want to get new console when the best game's coming out next year?
Durin, were you planning to pre-order Watch Dogs? Because I wasn't sure about that game.
I was really excited for it.
That was like the last game I wanted to get this year.
Really?
Me too, actually. Come to think of it.
Really? Wow.
Steam sales.
Between that and Battlefield 4, I have really no interest in other games this quarter or this year. Maybe Call of Duty, maybe, but.
But you have to realize Steam sales.
It's been long enough since I played Call of Duty. Maybe I'll play it. I don't know.
I like what they're doing this new one, which from what it sounds like. But yeah, Watch Dogs, I was really kind of interested in.
Yeah. Like, so what we're referring to is, as Stubbleton noted, segueing to a new topic, Watch Dogs and The Crew by Ubisoft are both being delayed.
The Crew had a release date?
They're both worse and better. It was slated for the end of the year. But
really?
No,
release date.
Well, no one expected that. Come on.
It's a driving game.
Well, nothing. We haven't seen anything of it since E3, so of course it's not coming out at the end of this year.
Like, I always get like four other driving games by that time. So
it was a driving game coming out the same year as both GT6 and Forza. Like, even though it's like a different game. Yeah.
What?
It is.
That's not happening.
PS3 only, though. PS3 only, not PS4.
We haven't even seen anything but the teaser trailer for GT6?
I think there's been a couple couple trailers, but no, like, impressions.
I refuse to believe that game is close to being finished.
Come on. Are you going to do
It's about as close to being finished as any Polyphony game would ever be.
There you go. But yes, Watch Dogs, which is one of the top of, like, near the top of my list of things I wanted for next gen, has been delayed to 2014, I think it was like March through, it's after March, so first quarter for them, which is the second quarter of the year, is when you're looking for that game to land. So alongside other massive titles that have been also moved to 2014. So you're kind of looking at a next gen or just the rest of the year without Watch Dogs in it, and that kind of changes the landscape quite a bit. Like, what are you guys' impressions? Were you guys surprised, first and foremost? Because I was actually really surprised that this happened.
Yeah,
I thought it was
absolutely.
Yeah, I was totally shocked.
All joking aside about Daniel Dwyer's video, like, he was kind of right. Like, that was really, for a lot of people, that game was what was going to define the next generation. Like, that was a lot of people's reason, I think, to get a next-gen console.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, at least a next-gen console at this point. Yeah.
It comes hot on the heels of their announcement that the PC specs would be ridiculous, and therefore requiring you to buy a console that can handle it.
It's kind of crazy, and also like that the console versions in themselves will be handicapped. It's like the thing was not confirmed for either 1080p or 60 frames a second. It was just like I think it may have straight up been the pressure from things like that. I hate that community is so much power now, but the massive NeoGAF thread with Watch Dogs and just like the amount of like Twitter feedback and stuff like that they've had about their system specs and their performance like questions.
Well, they had said that the system specs were not actually accurate.
Oh, okay. Are they?
Yeah. Like they said that
so maybe it was just broken.
Those system specs that came out were not official specs. Those were NVIDIA specs.
It's kind of weird because the game was fully playable and it seemed really promising. It's just that to hold it this late for a delay would either be something horribly wrong with their code or something horribly like it would be something either performance wise or something they couldn't make work gameplay wise. That would be the only things.
I bet it was technical.
I was thinking maybe. Yeah, I guess technical as well. But yeah, dude, like, what do you? So, Dura, you weren't planning on a PS4 this year either way, right? Like that
was no. I was. I really think that I would be better off holding off anyway. Like either way.
Yeah. Yeah, and so like I was the and Mage Knight, we never actually had you on for this. Like, were you playing an next gen console or?
I'm probably gonna get a PS4 around December, but I don't know. Maybe not. We'll see. Like if it comes out and everyone it's like bursts in flames as soon as you turn it on and it's all terrible and then Xbox 4 when you turn it on or Xbox whatever it's called Xbox One gives you $1 million and you turn it on sure whatever but for now I'm probably gonna buy a PS4. All things held equal.
So for me, I'm kind of interesting position that I wasn't sure Watch Dogs would be a good game in the first place.
Oh, like, sure.
It's the crazy thing was it looks really good, and it was the game that wowed me the most at E3 last year. Like I was blown away by it. But like as they revealed more and more about the game, the hacking stuff sounded really cool. But they continue to and they try to keep posing this whole thing about you don't need guns to solve all situations, but you kind of still need guns to solve all situations. And the whole like thing about the character not being very, he's not well defined. He's not like morally well defined,
right? Like he's just Altair in another form in a gameplay that's very much like Assassin's Creed. Like
exactly.
Ubisoft seems to have like this recipe for making a AAA game now, and they're just like throwing and getting the same like cake shaped thing out. It just tastes different.
Exactly, and so I wasn't convinced that it would be anything special. Like I knew it would look good, but when you start comparing it to other games like Infamous Second Son, it doesn't even look that good anymore. So I was unsure about it. And it doesn't affect my buying decision.
It really doesn't look that great. I don't know if it's just that they're just going for a Chicago that looks sort of realistic, which is it's very like gray concrete, or if it's or if it just is really shitty art direction. But like,
I don't know. It's just something about like I know when they show stuff that's in the rain, it looks really great. But it's just like during daytime, he's walking down the street. So it's crazy how much things have changed since last year. Like just one year difference. Holy shit, games are starting to look just amazing. And standards have changed. So, yeah, I just don't know. Like, it doesn't affect me if anyone is interested. And Durin, it doesn't really affect you either in terms of purchasing decisions. But, like, now what's left to look forward for the rest of the year? Like, I know my answer to that question. It's Phoenix Wright 5. It's coming out for 4 days. how about you guys? Is there anything, like, is the holiday season looking bleak now?
Well, there's still a Steam sale, so as a PC gamer,
I think this year is looking like a lot of backlog going through. Like it's going to be like I'm going to play Battlefield 4, and I'm going to play that a lot for a really long time. It's going to be a lot it's going to be a lot of just playing games I haven't played yet or trying to get through before the new console cycle happens, I guess.
Man, it's kind of grim, Durin.
Yeah, a little bit.
I think I'm still probably going to get like. I probably won't get one at launch, but yeah, I definitely think the order of big purchases for this habit is going to be like probably an Oculus Rift dev kit, just because I need to get one of those.
Man, how's that going? By the way, are they purchasable now? Like, is it possible to get one within a short duration?
I think it's still a pretty long amount of time. I don't know.
Man,
but yeah, it's. Probably going to be that, and then a PS4 probably in the new year. I don't know. Probably is Destiny coming out? Have they announced it for PC? Is it still only consoles?
No, it's PC.
Consoles only. Still, no, it's still consoles only.
I've heard a lot of different information. Okay. Some people.
Titanfall will be getting for PC. Destiny will be getting for console, and that might be the new MMO I'll be playing. I don't know.
I've heard people say that. Well, I think people are speculating that it'll come up on PC. Like a lot of people.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be like timed exclusive on the Xbox One, and then
it will probably. Seems likely.
Yeah. What was I saying? So like, so any purchases? What games are you looking for to Doubleton? This is next year. Like this is the scary thing to me, man.
There's not a lot of games for this year. It's Titanfall and Destiny are two big ones.
AC4 could be interesting.
I kind of want to play I want to play that Below game that is from the same guys who like Super Brothers. Or
yeah. Oh, yes, yes.
But
that is that coming up this year?
That's, I think that might be Xbox release. I don't know. But the thing is, that's an Xbox exclusive, and I, at least right now it is. And I don't want it enough. This can be the Journey thing. Of, man, that game looks amazing. I'm not going to buy a whole console just for that game.
Yeah, I don't know. At least for me, I'm getting a PS4, so I'm going to get like, what's space? I'm going to get Killzone, probably. I'm probably going to grab Resogun. I'm probably going to grab Drive Club. But that's actually been delayed as well, hasn't it?
You can play War Thunder and Warframe on your PS4.
You will not be getting like Drive Club because it's also been delayed.
Yeah, it's next year.
It's also been delayed. Yeah. It's like a full... What?
X-Rebirth.
So,
yeah, X-Rebirth could be... I feel like X-Rebirth is a wild card. Like, it could be really good. It could be really bad.
Well,
I don't
it
really
just
know.
Needs to be as good as X3. If it looks that great, I might actually try to play it again. X3 is great. It just
I don't like
difficult.
That you only have one ship in X-Rebirth. I don't like that.
Wait, can you only have one ship?
You only have one ship.
Well, because like Freelancer.
It has, it has a detailed interior, and they didn't want to do it for every ship, so they just give you one ship you can upgrade.
Well, I mean, like, Freelancer did that, and Freelancer was one of the best games.
I mean, in terms of, like, space games I'm interested in, Star Citizen, but I'm not going to drop $20,000 on it. I'm probably going to wait until it gets closer to
so
being
ridiculous.
A real thing that I could play, and then maybe drop $40 on it.
That and, like, that and Project Cars are things that I can't see happening anytime soon. God damn it. Both of those games.
Oh, Planetary Annihilation. When's that coming out?
I think you can get it right now. It's on Steam Early
Access. Like when is 1.0 coming out?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, but there you go. Like Watch Dogs, leaving a hole in the holiday season.
Maybe it's 3 and 4.
We'll see if I can.
Pretty dire. Oh, there's a new Ratchet and Clank coming out this year.
I mean, Battlefield 4
is it this year.
It's November 12th, according to GiantBomb.com.
Oh, yeah, I'm actually looking on the GiantBomb.com as well. Assassin's Creed, I'm gonna hold off on. I'll probably not even get. I know Duran will probably get that and talk about it, but.
I don't know, three
tricked me into stealing my money.
Nice.
Battlefield 4 I might get depending on the levels. Right now the China downtown level I just don't like, and it's just I don't know, hopefully the other maps are funner.
It would be sad if GTA 5 is the last game of the year contender to come out this year. That's all I'm saying. And with that, let's move on to the last and final news item for the week. Duran, do you want to take us away with your happy, your glad news, your little warm Nintendo heart? Stoked with the fires of sales.
Okay. So I don't know the exact numbers, but it was something like in the US, sales of the Wii U after the price cut and launch of Wind Waker had jumped like 200%, and in Europe it had jumped like 630-something%, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
So like they're selling them now.
Yeah,
like 600% of what original.
Think of it this way: like those launch units are now finally leaving the shelves. After all these months, as the person who bought that game or that system at launch, I am fully aware of how terribly it is selling, and for good reason, because nothing's coming out on it. I feel like this could be the beginning of the stride that it needs, similar to what the 3DS got, and now that like the 3DS is doing great in sales. It's hard to say whether it will see good or bad sales this holiday season with the new consoles launching, because obviously for like people like us, if you had a choice, you're going to choose probably the PlayStation 4 or the Xbox One. But we're also not really Nintendo's target market for holiday season sales. So I think that that's one of the reasons why they originally planned on launching that new Mario game this holiday season. I think that's gotten pushed back.
You serious?
I think so. Yeah. There was a Nintendo game that got pushed back, and I think it was Mario.
That was like the one. That was like the 1-2 punch of Zelda.
Oh,
Mario.
No! I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry. Donkey Kong Tropic Freeze. That
Donkey Kong, no one cares. The game.
Yeah, yeah. The one that Nintendo thinks is going to save the Wii U. That got pushed back to 2014, I think. But no, Mario is definitely still coming out. Like that. they had games targeted at a younger audience coming out this holiday season because Nintendo is at least smart enough to know that is where their target should be this holiday, not us.
Right. They aren't able to contend with the matured adult gamers for the holiday season.
Yeah,
our,
I mean,
our money is spent elsewhere.
I will say it was nice to hear. What game was it? I want to say it was
Ratchet and Clank.
When they were talking about Watch Dogs, that the Wii U version of Watch Dogs will actually look and run better on Wii U than it will on the PlayStation 3 and Xbox versions. Like they actually they took the time to actually make it the game for that hardware as opposed to just doing the lazy port.
Yeah.
Granted, Ubisoft's the only company who's going to do that. You are not going to see EA and Activision taking that kind of time. Well, but as much as
it's crazy because I can now, after seeing Moonraker, I can now freely admit that that system can pump out way better graphics. Well, not way better graphics, but significantly better graphics than the current gen system. So it is a kind of, it's not current gen. I'm finally convinced that's not just current gen.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's just nice to see a publisher willing to put the money into and the time into actually proper version for that.
A publisher who isn't Nintendo themselves do it. Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, it's Ubisoft who might as well be Nintendo. I feel like they either Nintendo is paying them a lot of money or something has happened to the two of them because Ubisoft has supported that Wii U way more than they ever need to.
I think it's because they have monopoly on it. Like it's just straight up the only games you want for that system are Ubisoft games and Nintendo games. So they get the sales, whereas other people just don't. They've edged everyone else out of the Wii U market. So
I'd be curious to see if they did the same with Assassin's Creed 4 or if it's going to also be just a straight port from the other versions. But I feel like the Wii U has a chance to find a place even with normal gamers, but I'm not sure what's causing this, but a lot of recent cross-platform launches are releasing sans DLC on the Wii U.
Really?
Like, and the publishers aren't even saying why it's not coming out, just that it's not. Like, I believe Assassin's Creed 4 will not have any of the DLC.
Wow.
Batman Arkham Origins, I think, won't either.
Oh, that game's coming out this year. I forgot about that.
But yeah, it's weird. Like,
let's move on. Batman Arkham Origins.
I guess so. Really cares about is coming out this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird that like I don't understand why because like the Wii U has a proper online or about as proper an online infrastructure as Nintendo can have in 2013. It has it has means of patching of digital content. I mean, hell, they released New Super Luigi
thing,
as DLC for that game. Like that is doable on that system. I just wonder if maybe it's hard for external companies to do that and so they just opted not to worry about it. Because they know that the sales numbers for DLC on a Wii U probably aren't going to be particularly high. It's just kind of unfortunate because it immediately
makes... That could straight up be the problem.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, though, because it then, like, for people who do have multiple platforms, immediately cuts the Wii U version out as a possibility.
Yeah. Why would you get that version when you can't get any of the follow-up content?
Think of it this way. Like, if you are somebody who does not plan on getting a next-gen console at launch... doesn't have a particularly powerful PC, has current gen consoles and a Wii U, and Watch Dogs comes out and it news is out that Watch Dogs is not going to release their DLC on the Wii U, even though it's a better looking version, you're still going to unfortunately be pushed back to the PS3 or 360 version because you're going to want that DLC.
Yeah.
Like at that point, you are sacrificing fidelity for DLC because of a dumb business decision.
Oh, well. Oh, so where do you think it is now? Do you think this is a trend, or do you think it's a spike just for Wind Waker? I'm on the latter, but I'm a proven Nintendo.
I think it has a chance to be a trend. I just it really comes down to whether or not Nintendo can keep up the momentum. Like, if they can continue releasing games, because that was what the 3DS that's why it started to do well is they got that initial spike, and then they just fucking churned games out, not in a negative way, but. They got content out there to get people to continue buying and continue buying and continue buying. And so eventually that became a healthy system. And I feel like the Wii U has a chance to do that. But you know, as somebody who doesn't care about the games, you know, say what you will about Donkey Kong, hearing that that has already been delayed to next year, like that's already immediately dropping a hole in their pipeline. That they desperately...
On the other hand, it's put something next into next year where they had nothing.
They had Smash Brothers next year. That's all they needed.
Is that your stance? That's all they needed was Smash Brothers?
Smash Brothers is like, if any Nintendo game is a system seller, Smash Brothers is a system seller. There's a reason why they paid Sakurai a ridiculous amount of money, gave him his dream team to come back and make that game.
Wow. I didn't even know that. I didn't know anyone gave it.
They opened up an office for him. Like, straight up opened up, like, bought a building and opened up an office just for him for that game. Because he had actually left Nintendo and said he wasn't
going to. Does anyone care about Smash Brothers? I will never understand, but I will take your word for it.
Smash Brothers is so much fun. It's like an easy to play fighting game.
I've actually, like, thought about putting in my Smash Brothers Brawl recently.
Hey, Mage Knight, have I talked to you about Dive Kick?
no, get Skullgirls instead. Skullgirls.
Oh, dear. I don't really play fighting games.
No, I never played fighting games, but Skullgirls is actually really good.
Is it because it has stupid Nintendo characters in it? Is that like the thing? No, I'm sorry, I just did that to
actually a legitimately good fighting game. Like,
it's also
Smash Brothers. It's a really good fighting game for people who aren't particularly good at fighting games.
Yeah, definitely. Mm. Like, it's baby's first fighting game. Just like Pokemon is.
Anyway, I don't want to keep making Nintendo likers mad. That's just end out the show.
Can I quickly make Guild Wars likers mad?
Sure. You know what?
Okay, we're going as far. Guild Wars 2. There's no fucking costumes for Halloween. What's the point of playing?
No new costumes?
No new costumes.
That's kind of sad.
That's a little sad, yeah.
Really
Yeah.
I realize that their team is probably stretched pretty thin over what they have.
Guild Wars 1, I think, still had costumes right until the release of Guild Wars 2, though.
Yes, it did. In fact, it got like new and different types of costumes as
Yeah. I think right now, if I could choose to play either one, I would probably play Guild Wars 1 right now.
I think a lot of people would probably agree with you.
You know what? Your offer from earlier kind of sounds like...
What? Even if it's not even like for gameplay reasons, just for like nostalgia reasons, I go back.
You want to play through Guild Wars 1 again? I don't.
Not the entire thing. I wouldn't mind just going.
You should play. What was the expansion that delivered you the fastest? The one with the
factions.
Factions. You should just play factions. I did that. I did factions. I did factions to get from whatever the max level to max.
No, you don't do factions. You do Eye of the North to get to max quick.
Okay,
factions has the opening island.
Yeah, factions. I did factions to get to whatever. My friend told me to play factions, and I did.
Factions to Eye of the North.
I read through factions and it was not fun. It was not very fun at all.
No, prophecies is where.
But the music was amazing.
Oh, the music was great, of course. But
prophecies and Eye of the North, man, I have such fun.
I hope you like running through sewers.
Anyway, Jesus Christ, let's end out the show. Video thank you for games. Listening to this episode of the Scotchcast. Durbleton, do you have any plugs?
Again, if you are interested in Spelunky or at least are doing the daily challenge, I entreat you to check out my YouTube page because I've been consistently posting my attempts at the daily challenge. And it's been kind of fun. I don't know. But that'd be www.youtube.com/user/naptownclimber, as in you're taking a nap, then town, then climb, then
Durin, e-bugs.
It's a reference to Indianapolis.
You literally caught me as I was eating an ice cube.
Don't do that.
Plug? No plug.
All ice cubes.
Ice cubes. They're pretty good.
They're funny.
Pretty good.
Durin, you cold as ice.
You just straight up just eat ice cubes? Is that a thing people do?
If it's smaller enough ice cubes.
That is a thing my wife and son both do.
I can understand a baby, but my dog.
You started a new generation of horrible, horrible monsters. Like
my dogs really like ice
cubes. New Roma,
any plugs?
Any plugs?
like honestly, if anyone wants to go back and play Guild Wars 1, I don't know how, but like comment or something because I'll do it. Someone.
You know what? Send us something to our email, which I'll plug in a second.
If you're like a pretty girl, then definitely I would play anything.
Or if you want to pose as a pretty girl just to troll noob.
I don't. Just someone play Guild Wars with me one. Like, I don't think I'm gonna.
I might. I kind of feel like doing so. Mage Knight.
Hey,
I know it's kind of on the spot. I don't know if you're aware that we do this, but any plugs and you're
I
do.
I know you do this. Come check out the Giant Bombs Gaming Hub.
Yes,
we play cool games with fun people, and it's really good.
We never do events, but we play.
We never do events, but we promise to do more. I've been trying to get
with fun people.
If you have ideas for events for the Giant Bomb PC Gaming Hub, send a PM to Mage Knight on the site.
Also, like, if we will, you, when you come, we might not necessarily be playing games, but we will talk about games we want to play and should
or
play.
Or we'll talk about bullshit, in which case you can interrupt us and ask for games.
Yeah.
We have a mobile server, come check us out there.
Yeah.
Buy Kerbal Space Program, it's a cool game, you learn a lot, it's fun.
Cool. And for me, my plugs for the week would be probably the most impressive, this year, unlike for games, actually, I'd say like for games... As with books, it's been a fucking amazing year for like books I'd never heard of before that I tried out for the first time and was absolutely blown away by. And I'm a fantasy geek, so yes, it's still in the fantasy genre. If you don't care, deal with it. The Acts of Cain by Matthew Stover. So The Acts of Cain will be in the show notes. Is a series. It's actually neither fantasy nor sci-fi, but a blending of the two that's unique and amazing. It's the single most violent set of books I've read. It's just fucking messy, but it's also for like what's his name? The guy who wrote Moby Dick.
Ismail?
No, it's not in the same way. Okay, let's I'm gonna look up Moby Dick.
Herman Melville
in this podcast. Moby Dick.
Herman
I can't
Melville.
Believe it. Okay, so then he's not the guy I was thinking of. But anyway, sad, but yes. Great American authors have always been accused but also praised of having very simplistic writing, but a very thoughtful overall prose and message. And this is one of those books. So essentially has very easy to read and oftentimes really crude writing, but the actual message, the ideas, the world it builds, like the consistency of the motivations of the characters and the world itself are fucking top tier. Like I have not been this impressed since I've read like a Brandon Sanderson book. Like it's just really amazing. So the series is The Acts of Cain, the first book in the series. You see in the show notes. So it's by Matthew Stover, and that'll be in the show notes for this week. So that's my plug for the week, and that's everyone's plug, so I guess I can end the show now.
Well, before you end it, I will say that apologies to any Guild Wars 2 fans that also listen to the Scotchcast. I will try and... I will get somebody to talk to me about Guild Wars 2 next week. We might do a twofer as well, but...
Yeah.
If I end up playing Guild Wars 1, I can join you and talk about Guild Wars 1.
The views of the host this week do not accurately represent the opinions of avid Guild Wars 2 players or people invested in the game.
Mm-hmm.
All we've been doing is giving Guild Wars 1 or 2 such a great rep. Such a great game.
Yeah,
I liked it when it came out. It was I didn't remember.
Yeah, I liked it before it came out, honestly.
So thank you for listening, and goodbye.
I honest to God liked it before it came, like in the
me
beta.
Too. The beta was good.
I think I said it was the best game I ever played. Like I said it was the best game I ever played, and I still think the beta was the best game I ever played.
You are crazy.
Wait, so then that's the case with like what? We'll be right back.